Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! My gracious sakes, have I been waiting for this day. Monday, you know, my favorite day of the week. Of course, we weren't here on Friday, Friday being Christmas Day and everything. I hope everyone had a wonderful, wonderful holiday, however you may have celebrated it. We had a sort of a low-key Christmas here, but it was also very relaxing and very enjoyable. The ground is covered in snow right now here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia. And we're still working on the leftovers from Christmas dinner. But you know what? Good leftovers. So I do. I hope you all had a wonderful, wonderful holiday. But I'm just tickled pink to be back. I mean, back behind the microphone. 3 days feels like 3 months. I mean, I can take a Saturday and a Sunday and come back Monday, but you add in that Friday and I'm just completely discombobulated. I feel like George Bush after a ride on the Tilt-A-Whirl. Where am I? But it is Monday, and we're back for a foreshortened week. Granted, we will not be here New Year's Day, but, you know, otherwise, and I don't know, I may, probably won't take New Year's Eve off, but I'll be gone New Year's Day because I've got a massive, massive amount of college football watching to do that I intend to do. So I know, it marks me as some sort of shallow person that I watch college football, but it's my little bit of escapism. So we've got 4 days to get this done. And talk and cuss and discuss and carry on and so forth. And, you know, it's become a feature of Mondays that, Mondays are something and Wednesdays are something and Fridays are something. And what the Mondays are is Moran Monday. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Come right, cut right down here. Get your program. Can't tell the right wing Morans without a program. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Here on the sideshow, you will see right-wing Morans like you have never seen before. All for no cost to you whatsoever. They do this for free. Well, not really. They do it on your backs, but you get the idea. It is Moran Monday on the horn. And we have several nominees. One of whom, well, if you noticed the update that I placed on my status update on my Facebook page, and if you do Facebook, friend me up, and, you know, that'll be great, and I don't turn friends away and that kind of stuff. So it's a great way to see where where my weird little twisted little brain is taking us on any given evening. We have several nominees. We have, for instance, and some that I didn't even list. One of the unlisted Moran nominees is, of course, whom else but, Morans is Morans. Who? That's right. Michelle Bachmann, welfare queen. Yes, right-wing, fiscal conservative Michelle Bachmann, the woman who believes that if it occurs on planet Earth, it must be good for you. Remember? CO2 is naturally occurring, therefore it must be good for us. Oy. Yeah, that Michelle Bachmann. It turns out that while she is a first-class teabagger and probably a birther and a deather and a tenther and a, you know, that lot, that bagger. And that all means that, you know, anti-government. We don't need no big government. You know the speech. And she hates handouts and she hates socialism. And she hates welfare queens, you know, all that Reaganistic, the jingoistic crap. Yeah, she don't like her no welfare queens, except in herself, because it turns out she is one. Yeah, yeah, no kidding. And the more in queen of the Congress, well, granted, there's a bit of a competition going on there, because what's her name, Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, runs a pretty much dead heat with her. But I don't know. Michelle Bachmann may have opened up a lead with this one. Because it turns out that while she hates welfare queens, and hates socialism and government handouts, she's all the time that she's been going on about that, she's been collecting handouts. Yeah, no kidding. The Environmental Working Group is a nonprofit watchdog that, among other things, tracks recipients of agricultural subsidies in the United States. And lo and behold, guess who signed up for the agricultural welfare program? That's right, Michelle Bachmann did. She and her family farm, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, nudge as good as a wink to a blonde man, sign him all. The family farm, the Bachmann family farm, got $251,973, to be precise, in federal farm welfare subsidy between 1995 and 2006. Her father-in-law had been running the thing, and he took in about $20,000 in 2006 and $28,000 in 2005. Most of this was subsidized dairy and corn. We say subsidized. Michelle Bachmann might say socialized. So she doesn't believe in socialized medicine for you and me, but she certainly believes in socialized farming for herself and her family. Where corn is concerned, $4.8 billion were spent by the federal government in 2005, just 2005, propping up corn prices. $4.8 billion in welfare paid out to the likes of Michelle Bachmann, who hates socialism and Marxism. Yeah. So much for free market economics, huh, Michelle? Now, she, at the same time she's been accepting this welfare, she also did things like, voting against every foreclosure relief bill that would have helped average American homeowners, even though her district had the highest foreclosure rate in the entire state of Minnesota. She said that giving relief to suffering homeowners facing foreclosure would be rewarding the irresponsible while punishing those who have been playing by the rules. Remember, in Repiglican world, personal responsibility is something for you and me. It is not something for them, because when you get right down to it, they're just not very good at it. Michelle has a quarter of a million dollar stake in the family farm that gets the subsidies. Yeah, no kidding. So, in other words, she is directly benefiting from farm subsidies that I am sure she votes in favor of. But, by the way, The organization that tracked all of this, the Environmental Working Group, has compiled an entire list of absentee farmers in and out of Congress. These are people who, as the article I'm reading from Truthdig notes, they demand free market rules by day and collect their government welfare checks in the mail at night. Yeah, this is just a little bit distressing. you know, Chuck Grassley, fiscal conservative that railed against a public option or a Medicare buy-in for you and me. Yeah, he admitted he's been on welfare the better part of his life in the form of farm subsidies. But that's okay, because that's for, you know, them and not for us. Now, and I'll open the voting as we move forward. I'll open the voting. Another tonight's nominees for Moran Monday. How's about South Carolina Senator Jim Demented? I mean, Dement. Yeah. Now, you all know, and I'm not going to go into it with much detail because I trust that you have the common sense to be able to read the inner tubes as well or better than I myself can, but you know that there was a truly terrifying terrorist event over the weekend involving a Nigerian man who tried to set fire to his underwear and had enough plastic explosives or component of plastic explosives inside his tidy whities to theoretically blow a hole in the plane and kill everybody on board. He had a blanket over his lap and was trying to light his undies that, well, you know. And, of course, the right wing went into full tizzy mode, you know, having just out there publicly having kittens with crocheted tails wherever there was a television camera with a blinking red light on it. And appearing on Fox News Sunday, Jim Demented of South Carolina raced out and took the lead in the lunatic race. Now, before we get there, before we run the audio, I want to just remind you of a couple of things. Anybody remember Captain Sully Sullenberger? The guy who successfully landed a huge commercial aircraft in the Hudson River in New York City? That hero that was bruited and swanned about the TV talk shows for a few days, who used his bully pulpit that he had for that short time to point out that the whole reason that all those people who were aboard that plane that he was flying survived was because his union, not his employer, but his union had insisted, as had the union for the flight attendants, and the unions, every union that had anything to do with that rescue has intense safety training. You can't count on the bottom line accountant driven free market economically motivated private sector to worry about silly stuff like safety training or crash training. So Captain Sullenberger did put it out there that the reason the people survived on that flight was because of the intense and dedicated work of union members who had been trained by their unions for just such an emergency. Right? In other words, no union, you got a bunch of people at the bottom of a very, very frigid Hudson River. And then later on in the year, and I guess this is fitting as a sort of a year-end compendium, later on in the year, we had the freighter, the Maersk, Alabama, that was beset by so-called pirates off of the Somali coast. The details are still dodgy at best. But those pirates were able to be fought off by the crew of the Maersk, Alabama, once again, and they noted it freely because they had been given safety training along those very same lines by the union of which they were a member. And they, too, were bruited as heroes and swanned about the talk show circuit and did what they could to point out the fact that ship would have been hijacked or God knows what had they not had the union training behind them that they had. So I offer that simply as prologue to Jim Demented explaining why it was that the guy with explosives in his hands managed to get on an aircraft.
And Senator Demint, you heard Congressman Hoekstra just say that the Obama administration had downplayed the war on terror, had not done as good a job as it should have in connecting the dots. Your thoughts?
Well, Chris, I am concerned because it's related to another issue that we're dealing with now in the Senate. The administration is intent on unionizing and submitting our airport security to union bosses' collective bargaining. And this is at a time, as Senator Lieberman says, that we...
Oh, get this, man, a big red nose and some floppy shoes. Do please continue, Senator DeMinted.
We've got to use our imagination. We have to be constantly flexible. We have to outthink the terrorists. And when we formed the airport security system, we realized we could not use collective bargaining and unionization because of that need to be flexible. Yet that appears to be the top priority now of the administration. And this whole thing should remind us, Chris, that the soft talk about engagement, closing Gitmo, these things are not going to appease the terrorists. They're going to keep coming after us, and we can't have politics as usual in Washington, and I'm afraid that's what we've got right now with airport security.
Yeah, because union workers aren't flexible enough. Captain Sullenberger wasn't flexible enough to keep the passengers on that flight from going to a watery, miserable death. The merchant marine seamen aboard the Maersk Alabama weren't flexible enough to fight off those Somali pirates. Now, the fact of the matter is, if you advertise low-wage jobs and you have nothing in the way of standards except can't be a member of no damn Bolshevik union, you get an idea of what you're going to get there in the transportation. So I remember this debate when George Bush said, we can't have any more 9/11s, and if we let the transportation security, if we let airport security have a union, then we'll just be up to our armpits in 9/11s every day, sometimes on 12ths and 13ths even, maybe. Now, you'd have to have seen it, but that particular episode of Fox News Sunday, they had like four or five babbling idiots, and the closest that they came to anything even resembling sane, and wow, do I feel like I've gone through the looking glass for saying this, was Arlen Specter. Everybody else, clown suit. So I'd have to say that Jim DeMented has a solid lead here, but let's not give up, because there's another moron out there. Oh, yes, there most assuredly is. There's another moron out there, and she is such a delightful moron. This one showed up on CNN. This one is former aide to Richard B. Dick Big Time Cheney, Mary Madeline, the wife of old snakehead James Carville, who has now gone so far into the world of Orwellian newspeak that she can rewrite entire years. We got a tough competition tonight. There's no doubt about it. Mary Madeline offering her assessment of her time and the Bush administration.
He'd been as a leader in this first year.
It's not just the deficits, it's the debt. It's incomprehensible. And it's the Bush bashing in perpetuity. He never gives a speech where he doesn't explicitly or implicitly look backwards. I was there. We inherited a recession from President Clinton, and we inherited the most tragic attack on our own soil in our nation's history. And President Bush dealt with it, and within a year of his presidency, at this comparable time, unemployment was at 5%.
No, really. You heard that right. No reason to go get your hearing checked. She says that everybody that Barack Obama always either expressly or implicitly looks backward to blame George Bush. She just looked backward and erased him. This is the quote. You heard it right. You don't have to. No. Your lying ears are not lying to you again. I was there, Mary Madeline said. We inherited a recession from President Clinton.
You remember the Clinton recession, don't you? The largest expansion, peacetime expansion of the American economy since World War II? That Clinton recession? Yes, that one. The recession that they said wasn't happening and that the economy was running too fast and therefore George Bush had to have a bunch of tax cuts for the wealthiest people he knew. You know, the haves and the have-mores, as he joked at some rubber chicken GOP political dinner. You remember that, don't you? Of course you do. There was no recession. They said it. They claimed it time and time and time again. But that's not the gravamen of her insanity. The quote, I was there. We inherited a recession from President Clinton, and we inherited the most tragic attack on our own soil in our nation's history. She is referring, of course, to September 11th, 2001, when Bill Clinton had been out of office for fully 8 months. When roughly a month before, George W. Pinhead, I mean Bush, had been handed a CIA daily briefing entitled Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside U.S., and he went to cut brush or feed the milk the bulls or something. And President Bush dealt with it, and within a year of his presidency, within comparable time, unemployment was at 5%. It takes some solid brass to sit there on national television with a live audience and a camera on your face and say that September the 11th, 2001 happened on the watch of Bill Clinton. The facts and any sort of objective truth absolutely don't matter to this bunch. It doesn't matter to them. Holy mackerel! We inherited a recession from President Clinton, and we inherited the most tragic attack on our own soil in our nation's history. Now, there is one thing that the Bush administration inherited. They inherited a man named Richard Clark, who, beginning in January, started trying to get meetings with anyone who would listen to him, who had, in his own words, describing himself, who was running around with his hair on fire, trying to get someone inside the Bush administration that was otherwise preoccupied with the nuclear missile Star Wars shield to protect us against the bottle rockets from North Korea and tax cuts for the wealthiest people in this country and some of the wealthiest people on Earth. That was the preoccupation of the Bush regime in early 2001, if you recall, when Richard Clark was running around trying to get a meeting to tell them that something awful was going to happen. That was also the time frame when a report that was called from the Hart-Rudman Commission was released and given to the George W. Bush administration that said something awful is going to happen because of the way we handle airport security. And George W. Bush took that report and passed it over to the guy who would later become Brownie's boss. He handed it off to FEMA, and the rest of his cabinet knew not another word about it and went whistling, whistling toward Gomorrah. When I saw this story, I was almost rendered speechless. We inherited the most tragic attack on our own soil in our nation's history from President Clinton. What can you do with somebody like that? You know, when you say something like that, there should be a list. If any of these for-profit media operations had a shred of integrity, there would be a list. And when Mary Madeline says something that crazy, that absolutely divorced from anything resembling reality, then you just check a little box and draw a line through Mary Madeline's name, and she never shows up on television again. Because if you're going to engage in something resembling discussion of current events, there has to be some sort of common ground of agreement as to what the reality is. And when Mary Madeline just goes whistling and wandering off into the, you know, poppies will make her stupid, then it's over. That person can't participate in the debate anymore. If you're sitting at your family living in your living room and you're having a discussion about dinner, and one of you says, "I'd like hamburgers," and another member of your family says, "Well, I'd like fried chicken," and another member of your family says, "You know, I think maybe we should go vegetarian tonight and have some nice beans and tofu," and the Republican in your family looks across and says, "No, I want to have unicorn steak tonight," that person is out of the discussion because they're not operating in reality. I want deviled phoenix eggs. No, they don't exist. But she'll be back on CNN again and again and again and again. Just like Jim Demented will be back on Fox to talk about how deadly unions are. Because, and I think this may be salient to the discussion, these for-profit media enterprises have no scruples, no morals, no ethics. I've got a vote from David in Tennessee for Jim Demented. Today, a former Bush TSA head guy lit Demented up because he's the lone senator blocking the appointment of one Ed Souther, because Mr. Souther supports unions. So for that, as David knows, the very agency that needs a head guy can't have a highly qualified guy because Jim Demented dislikes collective bargaining. Quoth David, "Mo ran Monday, Mo ran of the week," says I. And amen. Our critic at large, Reverbo, chimes in and says, I believe you refereth to another bozo explosion. They're everywhere. Today's Moran Monday is a veritable clown eruption. It's close, but my vote goes to Bozo Bachman. Huge points for her consistent representation in this contest. A zany cornhead of epic proportions. So we're down with one Demented, one Bachman, but that's not entirely fair, because both of those votes came in before we got to Mary Madeline just making stuff up. Of course, maybe that's not that maybe that's just not that surprising coming from a Republican. So, you know, your votes are more than welcome. We will go to the phones at this point. Thanks to a couple of you for lighting them up. I hope you're still there. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, I hope you had a nice Christmas with your family.
It was. It was quiet, and it was relaxed, and yes.
Oh, that's good, yeah. Yeah. Same here, nothing too exciting. Watched the basketball that was on.
Yeah, there were some decent hoops going.
But, no, anyway, that, that Bachman, yeah, I mean, it's just, if it wasn't so outrageous, it's just pathetic, you know. These people who are constantly taking money from the taxpayers, you know, these rich people, and, you know, forever preaching against whatever aid regular folks can get. At the same time, just this ongoing transfer of wealth. It's just chronic. And it's incredible that, you know, that's what's representing us, you know?
Well, it is. And it's also shameless, isn't it, Sandra? I mean...
Well, no, it makes me just so angry. I can't even, you know, it's bad enough that they're getting these benefits from the government, the same people who always utilize government most and pay the less taxes, yet they are like leading these poor, ignorant people who think that government is out to get them, when people like Bachman are out to get them. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And she's real popular among those dead-eye people. I mean, I don't really, you know, I don't have any more sympathy at this point, except for fear for people like you and I, you know, that we're just going to be swept away in the madness that's coming, because I just don't understand, because you can make connections, I can. Why can't these other, I mean, what is up? I don't understand why these people get the support. You don't have to search that far just to see the hypocrisy, you know?
Well, but yeah, maybe, Sandra, if I may be so bold as to suggest it, you are assuming facts not in evidence. And what I think, where I think the assumption comes in is that people are being shown this information.
Okay, so you're saying it's a case of it's just not accessible.
No, it's a case of how many people in her district, Michelle Bachman's district, know this story?
Yeah, I mean,
and how many of the people who hear this story, what percentage of them say, well, that's just a bunch of liberals just trying to come up because they hate her because she's a Christian?
Okay, so it's just a matter of so she's just able to exist because people don't believe the stories?
Well, there's a segment who simply don't believe it because, you know, it's liberals. And there's another segment that doesn't even know it exists, because this isn't going to be carried on. This story's not going to be carried on Fox. This story's not going to be touched by CNN.
No, I mean, I've noticed that beyond that story, just a whole swath of stories just come and go and nothing is done. Like, I mean, I know I sent it to you sort of facetiously, but that asshole, what he said about his state, Lindsey Graham?
Yeah.
And that just went by la-di-da, you know, crickets. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? What, you know,
well, but the thing,
no one's held accountable, nothing's done. It's like...
Yeah, and you're talking about the Lindsey Graham, we're dying down here. I'm from South Carolina, and we're 31% black.
Right, that. I'm just, you know, I said he was a complete dumbass. But at the same time, I'm like, that just goes unchallenged and it's okay? You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, yeah, I do. But I think it has to come down to, people have to have information before they can make a judgment about it.
Okay, so, I mean, because I'm happy, I'm willing to accept that line, that it's, you know, not in the news cycle long enough for people to even catch a glimpse of it. And I guess it's not, you know, you're not inundated with it like you would be with a Tiger Woods type story.
I mean, well, there, yes. I mean, for God's sakes, I've got a couple of stories in the stack here that I've kind of had laying around since last week from the Brad blog, our buddy Brad Friedman, who'll be sitting in from Alloy this week. Lo and behold, you remember the hostage situation in Virginia last week? Did you? See, there was one. And, I mean, that's not a criticism of you. I mean, we can't all just catch stuff.
No, I have to say, I really don't. What was...
There was a hostage standoff at a Virginia post office on December the 23rd. And the guy who was...
standing off, I suppose. Someone describing the situation said he was really down on the government, hostage Jimmy Oliver told the Associated Press about Warren Gator Taylor on Thursday in an interview at his mother's floral shop about the government taking over the right to bear arms. He was angry at the government over taxing us.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's total misinformation, you know?
Right. But you know, where does, as Brad Friedman notes, where does this guy get these ideas that we're being overtaxed and the government going to get our guns?
Well, I would say that, you know, working people are certainly being overtaxed, but they're attacking the wrong source, you know? I mean, we're being nickel and dimed to death by, you know, the various corporations and lack of services that are happening. They don't seem to understand that when services are withdrawn, that's an example of a tax increase for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, but this guy's not upset about what you're talking about, Sandra. This guy's upset about the government needs. You know how these wingnuts are, these birthers and baggers, and you know.
But it's not true though. I don't see anything happening except people buying bullets like they're not going to be made again.
Yeah,
that's happening.
What Brad notes is that for 95% of working families, taxes have been technically lowered. But this guy's still, we got to eliminate the death tax. You know, they've got idiots holding hostages at post offices, the right wing does, Sandra, doing the work of people who eat hummingbird tongue for lunch. And the story goes, and it's gone, even though everything that this guy was saying was nothing but right wing talking points from the bagger movement.
And we never address that source. Well, no, I mean, that's just incredible. I just am, but it's pretty, I don't know, at this point, it's pretty frightening. And I have to say that, forgive me for digressing, but I had just finished reading in, of all magazines, Foreign Affairs, a long article about, you know, what's going on in the Middle East with Yemen. And, you know, this magazine is written for whatever, people who are using majors or in that whole establishment, you know? And it's just so interesting that all of a sudden we got airstrikes going on in Yemen, you know, predators. We're killing all sorts of people there. And, oh, this guy who happens to blow up his ass is affiliated with Al-Qaeda in Yemen?
Terribly convenient, isn't it?
No, but it's just, you know, I'm just sitting there thinking, am I going crazy here?
Well, and then
and a joke.
Well,
I don't buy none of it.
Jude out in Seattle forwarded this along to me. I've got audio here that I'll play later of Joe Lieberman saying, "If we don't act preemptively, Yemen will be tomorrow's war."
Well, no, I mean,
so we need to make Yemen today's war, so it isn't tomorrow's war. Huh?
I mean, it's all, you know, this sort of escalation in Pakistan, that whole area, and Yemen, is just topped off with this freak who decided he wanted to try to blow up a plane. And then I have to listen to Obama talking about we will not rest that whole until they're all whatever.
Yeah, I noticed in that speech where he was praising, you know, the people of Iran for standing up and criticizing the Iranian government and yada, yada, yada. For suppressing their own people during their holy month of what, you know, they're all holy months. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that speech was devoid of any mention of the fact that the Pakistanis, who despise the Shia, are actively repressing on them. I don't know if you caught this or not, but from today's New York Times. A suicide bomber killed more than 30 people at a Shia religious procession in Karachi, Pakistan on Monday, setting off rioting in parts of the city and prompting fears that extremist groups already waging a multi-front war against the government were now trying to foment sectarian violence against the country's minority Shia population.
Yeah, no, I saw that there was another, you know, huge number of people killed. I didn't realize it was, you know, attack on Shias.
Well, yeah, and that, well, it's the today, this one was the third attack in 3 days against Shias.
Right, no, it's been sort of on, you know, it's been like 20 here, 30 there, 57 I read. on one bombing recently.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but this sort of plot that happened here, I mean, thank goodness that the plane didn't blow up, of course.
Yes.
But, you know, all those people coming out now, you know, demanding Obama do what? You see what I'm saying? What is he supposed to do?
It's not what he's supposed to do. It's what the right wing will make of this whole affair. And that is, I had a story up. I don't know what happened to it. But from the Detroit Free Press, pointing out the fact that isn't it convenient that a dark-skinned African man, is involved in this, and it's being used as a leverage to start a new war with Yemen. And
yeah.
So that the right wing can say that, well, you know, that Obama, he's taking it easy on him because he's, you know, one of them.
Well, no, I mean, that will always be the case, you know, as long as we have the empire. I mean, if he's going to be the face of it, then that's what's going to be said. But it's, the whole thing is just out of control. I mean, it seems so amateurish what this guy was doing. It just makes me wonder, you know, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the comment, here it is, the comment from the Detroit paper, from some readers said, how long is it going to take to discover the Republicans were behind this one, too? Anything they can do to make black people, particularly a black president, look bad. Sending fat black women to blow up Acorn, devising scams to start a war, sending in a Nigerian with a fizzling pop gun and some fairy tale fantasy about his Al-Qaeda ties to blow up a plane right after President Obama goes on vacation so they can't tie in his actions to the actions of George Bush when he was told about 9/11. How much lower are they planning on stooping? The Nigerian, and I haven't read, I went looking for this, but I couldn't find it. This person says the Nigerian government doesn't believe a word of it, and neither do I.
Yeah. No.
And by the way, the guy's hearing was canceled today.
Oh, so take the Gitmo?
I don't know. Just know that by request of the prosecution, the hearing today, which I guess would have been an arraignment of sorts, I don't know, was canceled, said the U.S. Attorney spokeswoman Gina Belaya. I was not given a reason for the cancellation.
Well, no, the thing is, though, it's like, you know, this is something to watch to see how this person is handled, since we have all these extra legal situations in this country. You know, I shudder to think what fantasy world they're going to, you know, because they can make up anything now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Since they have Gitmo and all these other sort of extraordinarily, you know, different types of justice going on in this country. Who knows what they're going to come up with for this guy?
Oh, but it gets even better, Sandra. The Chicago Tribune is reporting that two of the four leaders allegedly behind the Al-Qaeda plot to blow up the airliner were released by the Bush administration from Guantanamo in November 2007.
Okay, yeah, of course they were in Guantanamo. Okay,
but now wait, remember who is George Bush's best friend and business partner in the Middle East? The Saudis.
Bangor. Okay.
Well, these two guys were released from Guantanamo into Saudi Arabian custody. Now these are believed known terrorists, right? I mean, you know, within the scope of this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bush administration turns them loose. Now, they're hanging on. You know, they hung on to a 15-year-old kid who was captured in a hole in Afghanistan, but they turned these two jokers loose who were sent to Saudi Arabia, where the Saudis proved exactly how serious they took it by this is going to be tough, by entering these two into an art therapy rehabilitation program and then setting them free.
What, in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh.
Art
but
therapy. You know, this is like when Mrs. McCain and Rush Limbaugh went off to Arizona to talk to the horses to get over their Jones.
You know, unfortunately, it's just really hard to find any credibility in any of it because, you know, as the economy keeps getting worse and worse for the vast majority of people, all of a sudden, you know, we're just seeing this sort of ramping up. I don't trust any of it. I'm sorry. I'm just sort of like, what's pending? Like I said, once again, I'm really glad it didn't blow up, but, after reading that article about...
Well, there was, and the thing is, there was a story that came out last night, and I went looking for it again today that was gone, that the same flight had the same problem on a subsequent trip back since Christmas Day.
Well, yeah, there was another flight from the Netherlands that had some other incident. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that, but I ain't heard nothing else since.
Well, it went down the memory hole.
You're right about that. I mean, and also that Mary Matlin, yeah, I saw that. My head was, I was so angry. I'm like, you know what? I realize it's been almost 10 years, but give me a effing break. He inherited 9/11? Come on. That's a joke, you know? I mean, I don't care if it's been almost 10 years. All that is so vivid. Sorry. They can't, you know. No one responded to her. That was my question for you. Did they say anything back when she made that statement?
Not really.
No.
I mean, the other person on the program was her husband.
I didn't care about that. I just think the people answered the question. No one challenged it?
No.
So now we're being told that it didn't happen on his watch. He inherited it because of Clinton's policies. Is that what she's trying to say?
Yeah, I'm sure that. I'm sure that is the argument that the 9/11 was well in the planning stages by the time George Bush was inaugurated, and that just dovetails into kind of sleazy Rice saying,
"Well, we never could have imagined that they would have used planes as missiles."
Remember that one when they got back from the Genoa conference, where they had where Precious Leader had to stay on a boat because they'd been warned that terrorists wanted to use planes as missiles. That.
Please.
They're honest to God. Like I said, I'm not kidding. I love getting on the air on Monday after a busy weekend of morons and stuff. But it is hard to remain something approaching sober through stuff like this. Because, I mean, this is one of those moments when you hear Mary Madeline say that, it's straight out of W.C. Fields or something, where you just pull out the hip flask and, you know, drain it.
It's horrible, actually. It's just sort of... You know, it just falls into that, it's just really demoralized. I think, are you kidding me, you know?
Yeah, and...
How dare she?
And see, when this stuff gets said, or what Jim DeMint said, it's not just that they're saying it, Sandra, and this kind of goes back to what you were touching on at the beginning of the call. It's not just that they're saying it, it's that there is a significant portion of the American... body politic, if you will, who are sitting there in front of their TV altar boxes, nodding their little heads, wagging up and down like it's on a swivel, going, yeah, so Herod did 9/11 from Bill Clinton.
I'm sorry, I just had an image of that.
I know, and it kind of gags you because you recognize that in that instance you are dealing with a really dangerous reality in this country.
Yeah, no, that's pretty incredible. Oh, listen, I'm like choking here. I don't know what's going on, so I won't subject you.
I understand, but it happens to me all the time. Sandra, you take care, dear.
Okay.
All right, bye now. Sandra calling from California. Oops, okay. And try this one then. Hey, nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
For only a $50.95 contribution, you can have a Bob Kincaid bobblehead swigging whiskey. Act now, orders are limited.
Or maybe we just need to do some sort of holographic thing like Avatar and just, whoop, yeah, and you down it, and Bob downs the pint and just throws the bottle away.
You know, speaking of Avatar, before we get into a story that you're going to say, I'm glad you caught that, but I'm kind of glad you didn't bring it to my attention. I did not get to see Avatar this weekend. The theaters were packed, and I said, there's no way I'm waiting in line for this crap. Not that the movie's crap, but I have a low tendency to wait in line. I live in a small town. I don't expect to, I guess I'm...
Yeah, that's why you live in a small town.
That's right. That's one of the privileges, for God's sakes. Well, But today I have a story for you that a lot of people should be paying attention. It's everything, Bob, when it comes to context. We had another terror attack. I don't know if people know that, but we did. You heard about this one, Bob?
Better help me.
FBI. Man flew into New York City from BWI with firecracker. That is the headline on Drudge. Now, if you go to the actual headline, it doesn't say a firecracker. A passenger who flew into LaGuardia Airport on Sunday night was questioned by FBI agents after allegedly boarding the flight with an explosive device in his possession. Officials confirmed Monday that a crew member on board Piedmont Airlines Flight 4126 originated from Baltimore Washington International Airport was cleaning the plane after it landed to New York around 7:30 when he found a large firecracker-like device wedged between two seats. You know, Bob, context is everything. That's what people need to understand. A firecracker-like device. To me, that could be anything.
Well, it could. I mean, if it...
And here's the point. Why wasn't this guy flagged? Why wasn't he in the news? Well, his name is Thomas Ouellette of Bonita Springs, Florida, and he's 67 years old, and he's probably white.
Yeah. And by the way, the other story, the one that I mentioned to Sandra, Texas Betsy just dug this one up for me. And this is dated yesterday, the 27th. A second Amsterdam to Detroit flight with the same flight number, Northwest Airlines Flight 253, suffered disruption after a Nigerian man reportedly locked himself in the bathroom before landing. The plane landed safely in Detroit and was immediately surrounded by emergency vehicles. Flight crew said the man was verbally disruptive when approached. It's not yet clear if there is a threat to the plane's safety. These security scares don't bode well for in-flight Wi-Fi schemes or any of us who enjoy our tech luxuries, particularly on international flights. Yesterday it was reported TSA might prohibit the use of electronics in the last hour of flights, yada, yada, yada.
It's amazing people get passes like this. And listen to this part. Authorities did not release details on this kind of device discovered other than saying it was a 4-inch long, 3/4-inch wide explosive pyrotechnic. Now, people, what do you think would have happened if this guy had a Muslim name? Would that be a 4-inch long, 3/4-inch wide explosive pyrotechnic? And would federal officials say, we don't believe terrorism was involved?
Wait a minute, that's a toilet paper tube.
Yeah,
4 inches long? That's pretty much, sounds like a toilet paper tube.
I guess what I'm saying is the fact that the federal officials, they don't say that this is terrorism. That's a problem, Bob. They don't say that this is terrorism when you bring an explosive on. That we have no idea whether it's a firecracker or not. I hate this kind of reporting.
Oh, that's dodgy reporting at its very best. But the other part of it is, why isn't, and I'm sort of doing the compare and contrast English major thing here for a minute, David.
Yeah.
Why is the guy who did a hostage standoff on December 23rd in Virginia not a terrorist incident? Because he was a white guy.
Yeah, it all goes back.
And he was a bagger.
A lot of people still don't want to believe that terrorism can be a Caucasian thing. We need a T-shirt. Terrorism, it can be a Caucasian thing.
Terrorism, yeah, or maybe a oh, this is a good one, David. A picture of a Bubba.
Yeah.
You know, with his Confederate flag T-shirt on and holding an assault rifle in one hand and a can of beer in the other, and his Confederate flag T-shirt says, Rush is right. And then just put that on a T-shirt and say, and just with the slogan, terrorism, not just for Muslims anymore.
We need to do something, because the fact that of how we're defining terrorism is really
Joe Bajant said it so very well in that lengthy essay that I read from a week or so ago. Where he said, and the American people still haven't wised up that all the terrorists seem to always be showing up coming from countries that have the oil under them.
Joe Bajan is profound with that comment, because it does seem like that's where we're headed. And
you can't even get people to call Timothy McVeigh a domestic terrorist.
You know, that's right, you can't.
The only person, the only white American person that we can call a domestic terrorist is William Ayers.
And it's funny that he's an educator.
Yeah.
Makes you think. The other story I wanted to mention, which I think is important because it's regarding Facebook, and I know a lot of people use Facebook. A designer spotted this. It's a scam group called We're Against the $4.99 a Month Charge for Facebook from June 30th, 2010. And what you do when you sign up to this group is it has 133,000 members. But what happens is it contains a link to a URL which reportedly contains malware and porn, but also attempts to download 25 items to your hard drive. So you probably want to avoid this Facebook group. We're against the 9 months.
Right. I don't sign on for any of that stuff if I don't know where it came from.
That's a good rule of thumb. But a lot of people, I mean, that's a really tempting.
Yeah, I'm
against I'm against people charging me money. I think a lot of people would just sign up on that. It's like, yeah, I'm against that too.
Yeah, sort of the Groucho Marx theory of whatever it is, whatever you're for, I'm against it. Well, exactly. I mean, I don't do Farmville. I don't do Mafia Wars. None of that.
My friend is hooked on, oh my God, I can't believe you spoke of Mafia Wars. My friend is not actually getting work done because he's doing Mafia Wars. And I said, I don't know what that is, and I have no interest in playing that.
Well, what it is a, and this, I just love this phrase, it's a time vampire.
It's a time vampire. That's a good one.
It just sinks its little fangs into your life and sucks away your time.
One last thing before I go. I think this whole, a bit of pop culture, I think this whole thing with Charlie Sheen, people need to realize that he needs to go to jail, and he needs to spend some time in jail. Because it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse with this new episode of him beating his wife, and his father shouldn't bail him out. He needs to spend time in jail, just like W should have spent time in jail.
Yep, and I'm surprised you didn't bring up the TMZ video.
Oh, I was
of James Cameron.
I was going to the Kennedy thing.
No, James Cameron. No, the Kennedy thing is out there too, and we'll find some time for that as well.
Yeah.
But no, you didn't, and so we won't. But
okay,
go see Avatar on like a Tuesday night or something. I mean, it's you know, we do one movie, you know, just because of the way things are around here. We go to a movie with the whole family about once every 2 years, and we never go to a movie. The only movies we go to at the theater are the ones that where you just go, well, you know, there's no sense in watching this on a small screen. And so we went to see Avatar in 3D, David.
Wow.
And I can't imagine what it would be like in IMAX and 3D. Holy, you know, wow. This was just a regular movie screen 3D. But the 3D is so, it's so much more, real. You know, it's not like those red, blue, green glasses. These are just totally clear glasses. But it was so funny for me sitting next to Ferg with these little glasses on watching the movie. And there are these moments where, like, there's ash falling and stuff. And Ferg's sitting there swatting the ash away from in front of his eyes.
Wow.
It's intense. And, I, you know, well, kids in the audience probably, but not better not say anything like that. But the story, you know, the story is pedantic and predictable. I mean,
yeah.
You know, for all intents and purposes, it's Dances with Aliens, okay?
Uh-huh.
But, well, it's Dances with 10-foot-tall blue aliens. But it's just such a damn satisfying little romp for 2 hours and 40 minutes. I mean, 2 hours and 40 minutes?
That is amazing that they actually did that,
and it never slowed down. It never lagged. It never wanted for anything. And so, for my money, it's if you have any plans to see it on video at some point, go see it in the theaters, because it's not going to be. It's not on video. It is simply not going to be what it is
on the big screen with the stuff popping up in front of your face.
I hear what you're saying. I guess I'll, if I don't talk to you before New Year's, I guess I'll come back with a report and let you know what I think of it.
Oh, do please. We can have a little Avatar Fest.
All right, that's good. Well, Bob, if I don't talk to you then, Happy New Year, and I guess we got to keep it rolling.
All right. Take care, David.
All right, later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David from Maine. And, hey, I beat him to the punch on one. Yeah, we did enjoy it. And it's got an environmental theme that's kind of hard. You know, James Cameron is never going to be accused of subtlety. He makes sure that you can't miss it. But you know, George Lucas somewhere is just weeping into his hands because James Cameron just ate his special effects lunch. That's amazing. Just amazing. So there's my Avatar review. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
How are you? The Cameron's a powerful filmmaker. There's no doubt about it. But what I want to get to from today, and it's just commondreams.org has this photo up there, the picture of a homeless man in San Diego. She makes a quick story of it there, then you can add the comments if you want, if you log on to the commondreams.org. Abby Cement, and I got another story by her too from, also on Christmas Day. Recession tragic comedy. This poor homeless man says, will be a big placard there, cardboard placard with black magic marker there. We'll watch Fox News for food! Exclamation point. Poor thing. Abby Miss Cement writes, here's to keeping your wits about you when you have little else. Hollywood Reporter's Andrew Wallerstein took this in San Diego on Christmas Day. And Abby Cement, another piece from her also regarding Christmas Day. It leads into what we're talking about regarding September 11th and the 8 full months of warnings from everybody else on the planet, basically, that George W. Bush had, that Al-Qaeda was casing buildings, federal buildings, including the Twin Towers in New York City and the Pentagon in Washington, and was going to hit us soon. And the outgoing Clinton administration and everybody else in the world warned him about Al-Qaeda was going to be his number one threat, and he did nothing about it.
No, it's North Korea. They've got bottle rockets. It's North Korea and the tricycle of evil and Iran and Iraq.
Yeah. Bill Clinton kept North Korea from becoming a nuclear power, but as soon as this bellicose, inbred, blue-blood George W. Bush came in, and from especially October 2002 onward, the North Koreans, you know, they had enough, and they became a nuclear power, which Bill Clinton and people, even a right-wing leading so-called former Democrat like Joe Lieberman will admit that the anti-nuclear proliferation actions by the Clinton administration, they kept North Korea from becoming a nuclear power. They kept that regime from becoming more powerful. They kept that regime from becoming more bellicose, and they were launching less missiles than they were under George W. Bush's regime. But the commondreams.org, Miss Abby Zemet also writes, firefighter Jim Ryan, who worked at Ground Zero in New York City on September 11th and for 3 months in the cleanup afterward, died of pancreatic cancer on Christmas Day. Ryan was 48. He wanted to go to the D.C. last month to campaign for legislation compensating those who got ill from working at the Ground Zero site. And this is just the top of the iceberg. Many hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers and the cleanup workers that came from all over the country, I believe their lives have been shortened. They're being killed slowly but surely as well. As anything, you can give me the physiological horrors of black lung disease for coal workers and coal miners. And it's the same, this asbestos and this benzene and all these toxic chemicals that were released because from the Twin Towers when they were exploded, I believe they were, it was demolition military explosives that they finished off those two steel towers and World Trade Center 7, which coincidentally that Lawrence Silverstein owned all three of them. He purchased them, the two Twin Towers in July 2001, Bob, and mysterious workers were going in there and drilling everywhere and causing dust to come down, and the people, the hundreds of witnesses to this too. And a few of the people that were actually in the towers that managed to get out alive, that these suspicious workers were in there, especially immediately after this Silverstein guy bought the other Twin Towers in July 2001. There's so much more to this story, but the fact is, if this bomber had gotten through, you know, if they would be crucifying for the remaining 3 years of his presidency, or for if he got somehow lucky and got sent.
Oh, I can hear it, Brian. I can hear it. Well, at least George, at least George Bush kept us safe. We were
safe.
And, but see, and that's the thing with the Mary Madeline statement, Brian, is it's for as bizarre and as, you know, just out there as it absolutely is, it is merely an extension of a theme that they've been working on. I mean, you've heard it. I've heard it. George Bush kept us safe. We were never attacked on his watch. That has been said long before Mary Madeline came up with this latest insanity.
That's right. She's her smug ways of they've always turned me off, Miss Madeline, and she's a fascist. I don't know what else to expect from her but lies. But the fact is, George W. Bush, he kept especially our soldiers in the years after September 11th attacks, the most evil day in American history, I would say. You know, even at Gettysburg, that was military on military. It was even more tragic. It might have been, in some cases, it was brother against brother, or, you know, fellow West Pointer against fellow West Pointer, that kind of tragedy that the Civil War was. It was our second revolution, though, and all the Pearl Harbor, the Japanese pilots, they were attacking military targets. And there was that radar was in its infancy. There was no way to detect them. They had everything to detect what, and they were following and casing these guys, just like the FBI agent named Hostie that was following Lee Harvey Oswald around, and all of a sudden stopped following him for months before November 22nd, or for 6 weeks before November 22nd, 63. The FBI agent that was tailing him, and he was a paid informer for both the CIA and FBI, Lee Harvey Oswald. I don't think he fired a single shot on that dreadful day as well. But I think these people, what they're doing, you can always get a lone wolf. You know, they try to make Oswald into a lone nut. But this young man who misguided, of course, and it just, thank God they stopped the SOB, I'll use language like that, if he really was what they said he was trying to do, of course. But he was a lone wolf. That's the dangerous thing, that no president, no commander-in-chief, on the regardless of being, you know, the most powerful figure in the world and the sole remaining superpower, you can't stop a lone wolf from getting through some. It can occasionally happen. But I'm also suspicious of some of the things that the British intelligence was not allowing this guy back in their country. And we usually work so closely with the British intel. There's something smells about this box.
Well,
there
is. And the fact that there was another incident with another Nigerian on the 27th, and and the story that David mentioned coming from BWI, a firecracker-like device.
Because it's a white guy, it was just
just a firecracker-like device. I mean, you remember the photograph from Katrina. Picture of the black people who were looting and the white people in similar circumstances who were foraging for food.
That's what the black people were doing, though, as well. They were trying to...
Right, yes, absolutely.
And get, for God love them, it's disgusting the way this country is still has so far to evolve. It's disgusting, but George W. Bush has sent us back so far. And that's the one final point I wanted to make there, Bob, was George W. Bush especially made our soldiers much less safe by the tortures at Guantanamo, the tortures at Abu Ghraib, and all over Iraq, the tortures at Bagram Air Base and all over Afghanistan. A Muslim man, it drove hundreds, perhaps thousands, especially from the south, the Arabian Gulf states, that's where the Wahhabis, the strictest as Sunni Islamic fundamentalists are, it drove them to go right to Iraq to become suicide bombers to blow up a few Americans. And that's what, because of the torture of Abu Ghraib, it wasn't making us stronger, it's making us less safe, and that's what that kind of torture is what made this, I'm certain, is one of the, part of the fuel that drove this young man.
Absolutely, it's a recruiting poster.
The other day, yeah.
And of course, I don't, not to just bludgeon the story,
no.
But, you know, the report coming out that these two individuals were released from Guantanamo in November 2007 by the Bush administration, that thing's a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, see, we can't release them. We got to keep them forever after we've tortured them real good. There's that aspect to it, but there's also the fact that these two were released, and these were apparently, we certainly are finding out a lot in a hurry about this guy, aren't we?
Yeah.
But they were his handlers, and they were released to the Saudis, who put them into art therapy.
Oh, my God. Well, those are our close allies, right? That they're still, the Bush crime family is still very close to the Bin Ladens.
They're in business with them.
Yeah, they took the bases out of there, out of the Holy Land of Medina, Mecca, you know, in Saudi Arabia, and into, you know, Qatar and Iraq because of bin Laden's wishes that they do that. And George W. Bush complied from going from mid-2003 onward with bin Laden's, you know, what he wanted to have done. And this is after September 11th, after what he's allegedly, bin Laden was the man that commanded these attacks on us on that worst day in our history. But I just, like I said, we can't be, you know, we can't trust any story about any. I look to the false flag. I don't automatically believe that. I can't listen to him most of the time. Alex Jones is just, it's so ready to, you can't, there's some, and I've read the book, Synthetic Terror on September 11th Attacks by Webster Griffin Tarpley. He makes great points that support September 11th being that sort of there must have been some collusion with some people higher up than our American government. The Al-Qaeda by itself could never have pulled off what they did on that day. And that's the thing, the four hijacked jumbo jet airliners having control for hours over the skies. And it's nothing like one lone guy getting with a little explosive device on a plane. That's much simpler to get done, as horrible as it is. I knew some of the Marines that were killed in Beirut on October 24th, 1983, Bob, personally. And that suicide bomber, that was Hezbollah. Thank God we never awakened the Shia of Iraq. They haven't let loose their suicide bombers on us yet. They've been trying to be peaceful, that Sistani, and even that Al-Sadr, when we tried to make him into another Saddam Hussein, a Shia version of that. But they haven't done that, but they did succeed. I wish they had cut him down and stopped him before he got to the poor kids in the barracks there. But that suicide.
Yeah, but remember why they were in that barracks, Brian.
And I got, even as a Marine, I got to say that was a military attack by Hezbollah, and they were very successful, Bob. I got to say that. I'm sorry for any veteran or Marine out there. I'm sorry, but that's what I.
Well, but there's, you know, there's something that goes behind that though, yeah. And it's the fact that Republican presidents tend to view our military as little toy pieces on a board that they can play with at will, because Ronald Reagan was repeatedly told, Mr. President, those Marines are aboard ship. They can get anywhere they need to be faster from that ship than they can from that barracks in Beirut. And Ronald Reagan told them all to screw off, that he knew better than they did. And he said, well, I want to put the Marines there to show the flag.
And then they had that poor, he was a South Boston kid there, the Marine General Francis Xavier X. Kelly made the scapegoat of that. And the fact is, he was one of the people telling him that we need to keep our Marines off shore.
Yes.
You know, that's like you said, Bob, that's the militarily, they had much more control of the situation there, and politically as well. They were not possible targets.
Well, and logistically, put them on the choppers and get them there in minutes, as opposed to putting them in trucks or jeeps or whatever and getting God knows when.
My God. And one other thing about this, against September 11th, is what the American people, they say they believe the official story, but I think most of them are just damn scared of the power this federal government now has, and that's part of the problem. But we need to just not be ready to just jump on Barack Obama for, you know, this young commander-in-chief where he's, you know, he can't stop something, especially a lone wolf attacker like this guy was trying to be. You can't always stop that, but I have more information, I think, Bob. That's great that I was trying to allude to, that the British intelligence would not let this guy back into England, right? And they would not let him anywhere near any British Airlines flights. And we have to, American intelligence usually goes right in line, in sync with the British intelligence historically.
Well, when we're not subverting British intelligence investigations, that is.
Yeah.
Because we did that too.
But one other, about September 11th, this Hani Hanjour was the guy that was supposed to have flown the plane into the Pentagon. Again, another ridiculous thing. Barely a month before he supposedly did that, which all of these expert pilots, fighter pilots, former, you know, aeronautics experts said it could not be done, especially by this guy. He could not even fly a single-engine Cessna at the flight school in Maryland barely a month before September 11th, Hani Hanjour. But the flight, that the guy that was allegedly, he was either killed or he definitely had the skill that he could have done it with. I hate to say it, God love anybody in the Burlingame family, but Charles Burlingame was the pilot of Flight 77. He was a graduate of the Top Gun, Navy's elite Top Gun school. He's been in the Naval Reserve 17 years. He was a guy, he's been through SERE, you know, that Survival Evasion and Resistance Escape School in the Navy. He was also a boxer in the Navy. And he says one of his friends, Admiral Timothy Keating, says he was in a plebe suburb boxing match with Chick. That was the nickname for Charles Burlingame, and he pounded me. Chick was really tough, and the terrorists had to perform some inhumane act to get him out of that cockpit, I guarantee you, end quote. He said that on May 16, 2006. And the fact is, he seems to be the only one capable of doing that with a plane into what hit the Pentagon, the only reinforced side of the building there, that five-sided huge structure, was Charles Burlingame. And yet in the back of my, it's like I still mourn for the Marines there dead in 1983 in Beirut for that madman. And then he sells weapons to the Iranian killers of, they were officers of Hezbollah that did that bombing attack in Beirut in 1983. And Iran-Contra happens after that. I felt so betrayed by Ronald Reagan after that. This guy proclaimed he never negotiated with terrorists, but boy did he ever. He always made all the deals he could to get in it. He just didn't care about, yeah, it's like you said, about what they think of our American fighting men and women now. It's like Henry Kissinger said much of the same thing, where he talked about the American soldier is just a machine to be used. It's worse to that effect, at least.
Well, yeah, and then you get Rumsfeld there.
And one other thing about Rumsfeld, Bill Clinton, where his anti-nuclear actions to stop North Korea from becoming a nuclear power, Donald Rumsfeld profited perhaps in the billions from that by he sold the water of civilian nuclear reactors to the North Koreans. Donald Rumsfeld, his corporation did that.
Oh, yeah, and then sits there and answers that question from the soldier in Chattanooga and tells him, well, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you want. You know, my God, what a spit in the face that was.
He's disgusting, and he's another one. He
needs to be standing in a dock at The Hague and just hearing the charges read,
yeah.
But, you know.
It's disgusting, Bob. But I'll let you go, it's good to hear from, and like I say, you know, Brian, I'm sorry what I did to you last week with the, I don't think Santa Claus versus the Martians is an accurate documentary regarding Earthlings' relations and historically with Martians. I don't think that, but I was just trying to add a little.
Oh, no, that was fun. That was, that broke things up. I was,
yeah.
It takes a lot to render me speechless, but, you know, you won the prize on that one, Brian.
Okay. You have a good night, sir. You take care. God
All right. Take care, Brian. Talk
Bye-bye.
To you soon. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's Brian calling from New Hampshire, and we will roll along. Let's see. Who we got here? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay.
Okay.
Hanging on.
You had fun at Christmas?
Yeah. It was an enjoyable day. Very low key, very relaxed, and very pleasant.
Good.
And watching 1 and 2 year olds open presents is just magic, because they're as fascinated with the wrapping paper and the packaging as they are with the contents thereof. I think if I had to do it all over again, back when our babies were tiny, I think Agnes and I just would have wrapped up boxes really creatively. And let the kids have fun with that, because they enjoy the boxes more than they do the presents.
Well, you have to put tissue paper in. It's no fun without tissue paper.
Right, whoa, absolutely. Yeah. A box with tissue paper inside a box with tissue paper.
Tissue paper, and they would have to copy the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, it was a fun day. It was a fun day.
Good. Good. So I called in to defend Farmville.
Okie dokie. But you do recognize that it's a time vampire, right?
Yes. But sometimes it's a good thing. And I'm the place where I'm living, where I've been living for the last year, almost year, some of the kids who live here were actually born to the family were born to their parents who live here, but some of the kids are foster kids. And one of the girls is 10 years old, and she has been playing on my farm bill. And she and I have been doing a lot of farm together and moving stuff around and playing, putting the animals here and there and deciding which crops to put where. And it's actually, I mean, it's not like educational, but...
Here a moo, there a moo, everywhere a moo moo.
It's more art therapy than the terrorist got when he went to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, well, I can just imagine what art therapy in Saudi Arabia is. Look at this picture of the heathen infidels, you know.
Yeah, well, anyway, I mean, we've been having some fun with it and also just really cooperating and patience, and you have to wait for the crops to mature and you have to wait for the eggs to be ready and stuff. And it's, you know, I mean, it's kind of a dumb game and it does use a lot of time. It can use a lot of time. It depends on how much stuff you keep on your farm. But it's also... it's social. I mean, like, I have friends from Farmville. I have people who are on my Facebook from Turkey and from France and from Brazil and from everywhere, like, all over the world. I've got people, I'm trying to think the farthest.
Well, I'm more comfortable with Farmville than I am with Mafia Wars, if that's any consolation.
Yeah. Well, Mafia Wars is all illegal. I mean... you're not getting stuff that's, and it's not, I mean, there's, you've got a crew and stuff, but it's not as cooperative. You're not helping other farmers. I mean, on though you get credits for helping other farmers. You get a lot of credits for helping other farmers and for sharing your crops.
Right.
And that's not, you know, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. It just, it's the time vampire thing.
Yeah, I mean, I probably spend, on school days, I probably spend half an hour on it, maybe 45 minutes every day, and just sort of between studying.
Mm-hmm. Right, but you also recognize there are people who spend a whole lot more time.
Yes.
And that's entirely their business. I'm not saying, you know, shut down Farmville or anything like that, or any of the other...
I also went on one of the Island games, and that one's boring.
Because I have I got to tell you, and this is going to betray me as a really shallow person, I have recently been introduced to the wonderful world of zombie killing via a game called Left 4 Dead, and it's a time vampire too, but it's you know, it was Christmas. And, you just start into it and you go, oh, this could suck away a lot of time.
Well, all of Facebook can be that way.
Yeah, I'm trying to get better with my Facebook and understanding things and so forth and doing my status updates. And now I've found another social networking, Twittering, tweeting kind of thing called Tumblr. So I got
it. Oh, yeah. I have a Tumblr, but I don't use it.
So I discovered that the other day and set up a, but you know what? If you notice, with all of these things, Cassie, and I saw it, it was one of the NFL programs yesterday. One of the guys talking behind the desk said, and if you want to tweet into us, our Facebook manager is, and the camera cut away to a lovely young lady, sitting behind a computer terminal, and she'll get your tweets to us just as quick as you get them in. Because, frankly, just managing the social networking is a job. I mean, what a weird little century this is turning out to be, apart from all the hell and damnation, so to speak. We now have career tracks in social networking. It's a career now. Managing somebody else's Facebook page is a career.
Well, I'm sure she only does that on Sundays.
I don't know. I mean, you know, the NFL's pretty popular. It kind of goes, you know, just, you know, send your messages to, you know, whatever, Howie Long, Facebook.com, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it goes on all week long.
Yeah. I guess it could be. I guess it could be. I'm actually, you know how I've talked about that one of the things that I'm thinking about doing is to be a journalist?
Yes.
And another one is to be a lawyer? I'm going to be calling into your show later this week because my journalism career is starting right now.
Yay!
A letter that I wrote to you that I ended up putting up on a blog, well, I had a friend put it up on a blog, that letter caught the attention of someone who forwarded that letter and my blog site to a woman who is one of the editors for The Nation Online.
Holy cow.
And they've been, like, originally there was one of the things that I sent in a letter to you we were going to put up on Christmas, but it was Christmas Eve when I wrote it. Like, there was no way for that to really happen. So now the focus has changed, and we're looking at putting it into a feature that The Nation is doing at the for the end of the year, where on the 30th and 31st they're going to have insights into stories that the media has missed, and when the media focuses on the wrong part of the story.
Wow! Holy cow! They should. That's wonderful. They should listen to the horn, because so much of what we do here is what the media misses, or
yeah.
You know, buried
yeah.
leads, or.
I'm focusing on two different stories that will be. I'm taking two different news stories and putting them together and working on an article. And I'm working with an editor and have been sending some stuff back and forth and, you know, okay, we'll take this and don't use it as block quotes. See if you can write about it without quoting it and, you know, kind of learning how to do some of it.
Right.
You know, I had to email him yesterday and just say, look, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I want to be a journalist, but I haven't really taken any classes, and, you know, I know how to write blog posts, and, like, how many words do you want, and what am I supposed to, you know, what kind of format am I supposed to be using, and he gave me some advice and some guidelines, and I'm doing it. Like, I'm doing, like, real journalism.
Exciting, isn't it?
And not just writing blog posts. That's really exciting. It's hard. It's a lot harder than I thought it was.
Writing is.
Because one of the first drafts.
Writing is a brute. Yeah.
And the second draft sounded like I was writing it for a social studies class. And now the third draft is starting to come together.
Writing is a lonely, brutal process. If you're doing it honestly, because, you know, you can't, well, like Hemingway, we've got this idea that, you know, Hemingway just, you know, went and sat in Paris and wrote novels while he was, you know, stacking up saucers at the, you know, at some cafe on the left bank. But no, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of social stuff, but you can't be participating in a lot of it if you actually want to get any writing done.
Right.
And you can't do it in a crowd either. Hey, everybody, what do you think of this preposition? No, it doesn't work that way.
Well, I mean, you can get advice and editing help. And
yeah, but you have to write that. You have to write it first.
Yes. Yeah. But, I mean, when he said to me, okay, this is good here, but your introduction needs to be, you know, more like this and, you know, and like what to do instead of block quoting to describe what I was quoting, like that kind of stuff I really needed.
Yeah, learning to pull out only that which is relevant, that sort of thing. Yeah. By the way, how is the college search going?
I don't seem to do anything during vacation.
Probably, well, nothing that you can see them doing.
Nothing, yeah. There's no letters, there's nothing. There's nothing to visit, there's... Yeah.
Well, you've got how many unresponded to applications out?
Eight.
Okay. Well, I imagine that come the turn of the year, you'll start seeing a few of them come in.
Yeah.
But, you know, something...
I check the mailbox every day.
Oh, I know you do. You check it, you probably haunt it, Cassie. Come on. If you could get inside the mailbox, you'd be sitting there smiling at the postman. You got an acceptance letter for me yet? Yeah.
Well, you can actually go to the post office in the morning and pick up your mail instead of having it delivered.
Tell me you've been doing that.
I do that twice.
I can see somewhere along the way there's going to have to be an Eastern philosophy class to teach Cassie a little bit of patience.
Farm Girl's teaching me patience. I stay for my crops to grow.
It has a purpose after all.
Started.
Well, Cassie, have a good luck and tell us when the post goes up and we will send it around the inner tubes.
Okay.
All right.
I will.
Okay, you take care.
All right, bye. All right,
bye now. And we are, that's our teen correspondent from about the age of 14 onward. That's Cassie in Texas. And we will keep moving onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good, Matt. What's up?
Well, I want to start out by telling you that I really enjoyed the previous caller. Miss Cassie, I would say, is definitely worthy of our admiration and esteem. And being a blogger myself, I actually wonder if she has a blogging outlet of some kind.
She blogs at freckles.cassie.wordpress.com. It's a blog she created called Political Teen Tidbits.
Okay. All right. Well, I will send you an email with some stuff tonight, but. You can reply to me with that that URL because I actually have just run out of ink.
Oopsie.
I'm Osborne Ink, and I have run out of ink in my pen. Anyway, listen, that was a great call. I wanted to say she did touch on something that is kind of near and dear to me. I call it virtual reality living, where Facebook has taken over and social networking, and you have guys getting arrested for using Twitter and stuff like that. You know, you really have a whole new kind of interface between the real and the virtual world. And this reminds me of, do you remember Cyberpunk?
Yes, oh yes.
Cyberpunk? Oh yeah, Max Headroom and all that. You know what happened to Cyberpunk, don't you?
It became reality, didn't it?
That's right. We woke up one day and it was news. It stopped being fiction. It started being science reality. And that's what's happening now with social networking. Now you've got people, as you pointed out, being paid to social network. This happens with every new technology, every new level of human development. So I have a reality show that I want to do. I think this should be broadcast for free to the entire planet by shortwave if necessary. I think this is your virtual reality show right here. Okay?
Okay.
Here's the pitch. 6 billion people live on an island in rising seas. They have 20 years to get off the island, or else they're going to drown.
That doesn't sound like virtual reality. That sounds like reality.
That's right. I call it Global Village. Here's the trick. Either everybody gets off the island together, or nobody wins.
What about the ones we have to leave behind? You know, we don't vote. I think in this game we're not voting people off the island, Matt. We're just agreeing that they get to stay.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Because it was our buddy, our critic at large, Reverbo, who noted last week, I believe it was, that you know the deniers and so forth out there. There's a level of frustration happening with that sort, where, you know, you just want to say, okay, fine, you go live in the Maldives then. We'll move the people from the Maldives to, you know, your nice suburban house or something, but all you denying baggers and birthers and deathers and tenthers, you just go sink beneath the waves in the Maldives. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good, you know.
Right, exactly. They can go inhabit the island and the coastline. You know what? The rest of us are going to get busy on survival. And so, yeah, I do think that there is something to be said for the virtual reality world that we've created, because we're starting to see it. We have satellite pictures now of the ice melting. You know, we can show the pictures. Look!
Exactly, and that was what was so frustrating in that story last week from the Build-A-Bear people, that they had allowed themselves to be bullied by the deniers into pulling videos from their website that taught children about what's happening in the North Pole.
Yes, I ran that on my blog. Yes, I always run censored video when I find it. If I find a video that has been censored previously, I will always run it. I'm considering starting a book club on my website of censored books, movies, materials, what have you, that have been censored for one reason or another. And, you know, I'm talking about classics like this. I watched that. It's not the best cartoon, but it really tells the problem in a way young children get. And that's important. Education is important. We have to start teaching our kids, because they're going to be dealing with this. Those kids who are old enough to watch a little show are going to be old enough to be dealing with this as adults by the time that 2-degree temperature rise is in place and we're all underwater.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I've had enough of the deniers. I can't stomach them. I can't put up with them, and I don't suffer them. Not at all. But I have something I wanted to tell you, and this is more in relation to previous callers tonight. I want to tell this story on the air. I don't think I've ever told this to more than one person at a time. This is a true story. Yours truly was almost a casualty in the war on terror. This is a true story. In 1997, I was flying into Kuwait as part of Operation Phantom Dragon. We had less than 2,000 soldiers in Kuwait. That's what we needed to contain Saddam. That's all we needed. He was completely contained.
By 2,000 soldiers?
By 2,000 soldiers.
What about the elite Republican Guard, Matt?
What Republican Guard? The Hammurabi Division never even came out of its gates for an exercise from 1992 to 2003. That was the closest Republican Guard unit to Kuwait. Never came out of its gates for an exercise. True fact. All right, so we're flying into Kuwait on a jumbo jet, 747. As we approach Kuwait over the sands of Saudi Arabia, the plane suddenly makes a hard right turn. Now, we've got this screen up in front that shows us our position and our flight path. And we all see that we're veering off the flight path. This hard right turn takes us out in a circle over the Persian Gulf. And I look down on it, and do you know you can see a sheen of oil on that entire Gulf?
Oh, I don't doubt it. That thing's got to be just a toxic waste pit.
And as we come around, we come over Saudi Arabia again, and we come into Kuwait 45 minutes late when we land. All right, now, there's a lot to do when you land. You've got to get hundreds of soldiers off the airplane. They've got to get their gear. They've got to get their vehicles. They've got to get their equipment, because we're training for the rapid build-up to war. Hey, Saddam is coming. We've got to defend Kuwait. So this is our exercise. Now, we get out to the desert, and it's a full 2 days before I actually get a chance to talk to the counterintelligence guy. I shared the tent with him because I was a translator. Okay. And it was one of those times when you've got two guys who are all alone who can share something. I looked at him dead in the eye, because I knew he was on the ground. He was part of the torchlight party, as we called it. And I said, "What happened?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "2 days ago, the plane made a 45-minute delayed landing. What happened?" And he looked at me. And he blinked. And he said, "There was an incident, and that's all I'm going to say about it." The details only emerged later in the briefing, because I started working with the counterintelligence guys. I got to find out what happened. And it starts with missiles the CIA sold to bin Laden. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Yes. Now, they didn't sell them directly to bin Laden. They did have some control. But one of them seemed to have found its way to someone in Kuwait. This was 1997.
Yeah, that could be a real problem.
This was 1997.
12 long
the
years
was
ago.
Already ongoing. I already had a friend of mine from the language school had been nearly killed by the bomb blast in Khobar Towers. We were already at war, but our mission, as far as terrorism was concerned, was force protection. True fact. From the Weekly Standard, if you don't believe me, of all sources, the Weekly Standard, in January 2004, in an article titled Showstoppers, revealed the fact that contrary to what you may believe from watching movies like Navy SEALs, the United States Special Operations Forces had never, not once, not one single time, confronted terrorism in any way prior to 9/11. Fact.
Wow.
Yeah. That's where we were on 9/11. In June, or maybe July, of 2001, there was a exercise in Jordan. Jordan had sort of joined our side in the coalition against Saddam before 9/11, actually. These Marines were doing an exercise with Jordan, and there were about 2,000 of them. And there was some kind of intelligence that bin Laden was aiming an attack at them. So what did George Bush, Jr. do? What do you think he did? Do you know the story?
No, I don't.
They pulled out the Marines and canceled the exercise. True fact. This was our government on 9/11. Everything that you already knew, everything that is already famous, is complemented by these facts. And they tell you that the entire apparatus of government failed on 9/11. It was a perfect failure.
An epic fail.
Epic fail. It's beyond fail. It's fiasco.
You know, what you're describing here is weirdly reminiscent of something I have here. It's a... It's on YouTube, and it is, just check this out. It's video, but there's some audio to it as well. You might find this interesting. Title, Yemen Conflict Raises Gulf Tensions, and it goes back to the 15th of November.
More than a week into the Saudi offensive on its southern border with Yemen, people in the capital Sana'a are worried about the possibility of a wider crisis involving two regional powers, Saudi Arabia and Iran. The Yemeni government still hasn't officially reacted to the Saudi offensive, claiming instead that it's making gains in the northern province of Sada and killing many Shia Houthi rebels. But on the streets of Sana'a, everyone is talking about foreign involvement.
There is no proof that Iran is involved in Yemen, but Saudi Arabia is pounding Yemeni towns and violating our sovereignty.
Saudi Arabia is our friend, but Iran is trying to spread Shiaism in Yemen and Saudi Arabia.
Mixed reactions that reveal the divisions within Yemen. The Sunni majority is pro-Saudi Arabia, but some of the Shia Zaydis are sympathetic to Iran. But for an older generation that has witnessed major events that rocked the country over the last decades, the fall of the Imamate, the military coups, and the war between the North and the South, this sudden shift of events is a dangerous new development.
We fought the British for an independent and stable Yemen. The Houthis are causing instability and divisions, and this is what invites foreign involvement. We reject interference because it will disintegrate Yemen.
Concerns shared by Yemen's elite. Ahmed Al-Kabsi comes from a family of Zaydi scholars. The Houthis are Zaydis. But he thinks the Houthis are doing the bidding of Iran.
Yemen is facing a crisis. There is a foreign agenda in Sada and also in the provinces of the south. There are countries that are not happy with us being united and strong, and there is a wider plot to split nations.
Amid strained Saudi-Iranian relations, an intensifying offensive, and a Houthi resolve, hopes of a political solution are fading, exacerbating the fears of the people. Over the past few years, Yemenis have witnessed all sorts of problems. A secessionist movement in the south, a rebellion in the north, and an active al-Qaeda. Now they face yet another threat to their future, an internal struggle some are calling a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, in which Yemen will pay the price. Hashim Al-Barra, Al Jazeera, Sana'a.
But of course, Matt, you wouldn't know that if you lived in the Mecca, because, you know, it's unpatriotic to have Al Jazeera on one's cable network.
Right. Yeah. Al Jazeera. Let me speak for a moment about Al Jazeera. Do you know why Al Jazeera was such a big hit in the Muslim world?
You tell me.
You would know if you watched about 30 seconds of official Arab television in the Gulf prior to Al Jazeera. You start out with dramatic dun-dun-dun, and then the anchor comes on and in the most monotone voice possible gives this long, polite greeting for about 60 seconds and then proceeds to tell you what the Sheikh did today. This is followed by about 5 minutes of video of sheikhs and guys in suits standing, shaking hands, sitting, talking, and flash photography going on the whole time. And then the announcer says, and now to the detail. And then you begin the actual news, which is presented in the manner you would expect from state TV. No splashy graphics. No real drama to speak of. It was bland. It was dull. And then, you know, what come on right after that was local version of Sesame Street, which was really interesting because Big Bird was a dictator. But anyway, that's why Al Jazeera was a big hit. They actually took news seriously. They did investigative reporting. And here's what people don't realize. They have been kicked out of more Middle Eastern countries. Egypt, they are news agency non grata. True fact.
And they're also non grata here, and we made a point of making sure they understood that by bombing them in Iraq.
We made the most democratic media in the Middle East our enemy. That was a really good move. Smart move. Way to win hearts and minds. The amount of reporting that Al Jazeera is doing out of Iran right now is pretty amazing. I thought this was interesting. And speaking of virtual reality life, and then I'll get off your radio show.
Don't get in a hurry.
CNN last night. I was watching the coverage of Iran. And you know how, like, with this bombing, attempted airplane bombing over the weekend, you had just the one shot of the guy going up the gangway into the airplane over and over and over again.
Right.
You had the speculators talking over the same 5-second shot going on over and over again, looped.
Important word there you just flew right past.
Yes.
You had the speculators going on and on. Not reporters.
Exactly. Okay, now here's what's different about the coverage. They actually had For CNN, actually in-depth discussion going on of Iran, and behind them is not a video loop. It's all original video. And the CNN anchor says, and by the way, all of this is from the Internet. We are not allowed in Iran.
Yeah.
The tools of transparency are in your hands. Fascinating video coming out of Iran. Did you see the one of guy? It's up on my website right now. There is a guy who starts a riot, and the rioters rescue these two guys from being hanged.
Yeah, I saw that. That is just mind blowing.
Yeah, all being caught on video. Welcome to cyberpunk reality.
It's amazing. And you know, that report that we just played from Al Jazeera, I had no idea that the Saudis were pounding Yemen.
Yes, they've been doing it for weeks.
And so let's do a little dot work here. I hate that phrase, connect the dots, because the right-wingers like it so much, and Rumsfeld liked it so much. But let's do a little dot work. The Saudis are pounding the Yemenis.
Yep.
The Yemenis, and of course, the Royal House of Saud is not beloved of Al-Qaeda or whatever that organization may happen to be. I think you can get an Al-Qaeda chapter just by sending in a matchbook now, you know, draw the terrorist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Yemenis, at least some of them, want to resist, but they don't have the power to directly confront a Saudi military that has all the bells and whistles and gizmos that the American merchants of death, otherwise known as arms businessmen, can sell to them. So instead, what you do is you attack Saudi Arabia by proxy, assuming that all this is true. And that's how you wind up with a dude trying to set fire to his underwear on a plane from the Netherlands to Detroit.
In a nutshell.
I mean, does that distill it down pretty well?
In a nutshell, my friend, that's exactly what's happening. Well,
now, let me, with the stuff going on in Iran, let me, I guess I'm a speculator too, but I don't make any bones of being a reporter, so I think that's at least a little bit more honest. Let's look at Iran for a moment. Now, in my conversation with Sandra earlier, I noted that for 3 days running, there have been attacks on religious celebrations by Shia Muslims in Pakistan. Now yeah. Obama's got me saying Pakistan, damn it. Three days running, three attacks on Shia religious festivities in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Shia are a minority in Pakistan. The Shia are, of course, a majority in Iran and a minority in Yemen, and certainly a minority in Saudi Arabia.
Mind you that Iran nearly went to war with the Taliban in 1999 over the Shia minorities there in Iran, in Afghanistan.
Oh, yes.
Just bear that in mind. Okay, go on.
So let me ask this. When you've got Saudis who hate your guts.
Yes.
And you've got Pakistanis who hate your guts.
Yeah.
And when the whatever the Muslim population that remains in India hates your guts, and you are Iran, and the Iraqis, for the most part, except those in the south, hate your guts, then what would be the best way to make sure that all those people who hate your guts leave you the hell alone?
Quit bombing them.
Or make people think that, you know, you're just loony enough to use a nuclear device if you had one.
Yeah, that was probably
that didn't work out so well for Saddam. Because he wanted us to think he was loopy enough to use poison gas on our troops.
Right.
But we just put on the Fremen still suits and marched across the desert.
if only they were still suits. Those things are bloody hot. That's the reason why there was this hurry up to war. We have to go to war now because February is the coldest month, and you want to wear the thick charcoal-lined suit and the rubber mask. You'd like to wear those in the winter if you could. Yeah, training in that stuff is real fun, I have to say. Half of basic training is given over to putting that stuff on and putting it on quickly and decontaminating yourself and things like that. And it's just ugh. No, I never want to deal with a chemical agent. Anyway, it's been great, thanks a lot, and I will send you that email.
Do please, and I will respond in kind. Thank you very much, Matt Osborne. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Have a great night.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Matt's blog is worth keeping up with. As you can tell, Matt is a sharp cookie. Osborneinc.com, OSBORNEINK.com. So check it out. If you haven't seen the video of the two guys cutting down the guys at the hanging, that's pretty intense. That's more intense even than watching Simon dress down some guy who flatted a note on American Idol. I mean, that's how intense that... Oh, I should be whipped for that. I mean, no disrespect. Yeah, I do. I mean disrespect for us. We, the people, who have the attention span of a gypsy moth. Eesh. Wow. Where did an hour of program go? That's... Well, Monday is flying by. Moran Monday is... zooming past. I got a question in earlier, and I've just been shorthanding it, and maybe the rest of you are going, huh, what's he talking about? Instead of going to the trouble of calling them tea baggers, I've just short-formed them. They're baggers to me, okay? So that's what that means when you hear me talking about baggers and birthers and booger eaters. We're talking about the right-wing Tea Party tea bagger outfit. So that's what bagger means. Bunch of other stories yet in the stack. I'd like to finish off. Okay, you heard the Al Jazeera report from 15 November. Now let's check out the report from 22 December. Bear in mind, 22 December. This is before the whole thing in Detroit went down.
A rare and defiant appearance. Fighters claiming to be Al-Qaeda, telling supporters their war is against the U.S., not the Yemeni army.
We carry bombs for God's enemies. Soldiers, you should know that we do not want to fight you. There is no problem between you and us. The problem is between us and America and its agents. Beware taking the side of America.
The gathering in southern Abaya province was disrupted by an explosion, which killed three in the crowd. It's unclear what caused the blast, though unexploded munitions have been blamed. The protest was taking place at the site of Thursday's bombing raid by Yemeni forces with the alleged support of the US, which saw at least 30 Al-Qaeda members killed.
This is a humanitarian crime that shouldn't happen in these modern times. I'm here today to participate and express solidarity with our brothers.
The Yemeni government says Thursday's raids targeted an Al-Qaeda training camp and foiled a planned series of suicide bombings. But these pictures of some of the victims appear to show children were among the dead. Al-Qaeda activity in the south has been on the increase, garnering the support of a growing secessionist movement there, while the government's focus has been on fighting Houthi rebels in the north. Al-Qaeda says it intends to use Yemen as a regional base, hoping to exploit instability in the country. A situation that Thursday's attack shows both the Yemeni and the US governments are not prepared to tolerate. Tarek Basley, Al Jazeera.
Are you getting the picture? Is it becoming clearer and clearer and clearer? We've got our fingers in another Arab pie that we have no business being in. Except for the fact that there are those out there who want us to be in it. I got an email shortly before the program from our good friend Jude, sending me along a link to a video, the audio of which you will hear in a moment. Well, no, let's go to the audio first. The link was to Joe Lieberman from Fox News Sunday. I referenced it earlier in the program. Joe Lieberman, who has never found an Arab that he didn't think would look much better. No, not an Arab. Joe Lieberman, who has never met a Muslim who he did not think would look much better dead.
We've got about a minute left, and I want to ask you both a quick question about Yemen. This is not the first time that we have seen possible ties between Yemen and terrorism. We've got the U.S. with Obama attacking airstrikes in Yemen. On the other hand, the Obama administration sent six Guantanamo detainees back to Yemen. Your thoughts about Yemen and what the U.S. role should be, attitude should be towards that country?
Yemen is a hot spot. We need to do everything we can to work with that government. We have about 90 Yemenis left in Gitmo. They should stay there. They should not go back to Yemen. If they go back to Yemen, we will very soon find them back on the battlefield going after Americans and other Western interests.
And Senator Lieberman, final 30 seconds.
Well, I agree with Pete on this. I know the president made a promise that he'd close Guantanamo because of what it represented in world opinion. But today, it's a first-class facility. It's way above what's required by the Geneva Convention or our Constitution. It would be a mistake to send these 90 people back to Yemen because based on the past of what's happened when we've released people from Guantanamo, a certain number of them have gone back into the fight against us. Yemen now becomes one of the centers of that fight. I was in Yemen in August. We have a growing presence there, and we have to, of Special Operations Green Berets intelligence. We're working well with the government of President Saleh there. I leave you with this thought that somebody in our government said to me in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen. Iraq was yesterday's war. Afghanistan is today's war. If we don't act preemptively, Yemen will be tomorrow's war. That's the danger we face.
Senator Lieberman, Congressman Hoekstra, we want to thank you both for coming in today.
Senator Lieberman, Congressman Hoekstra, go to hell. Many thanks to the fine folks at crooksandliars.com who grab so many of these clips that we use. Now, what Jude said. I was outraged when listening to Lieberman state, if we don't act preemptively, Yemen will be tomorrow's war. Oh, my God, Bob. It was spoken with such a casual presentation. Here he is lending his words that will lead to action in the killing of more families, more children, more soldiers. It was a type of pseudo-intellectual indifference. It was repulsive. So early this a.m., since the senator's offices are closed and Lieberman's voicemail is full, I focused and sent off my statement to him. If ever there was a time in history that we are required the use of diplomacy, it's now. And how tragically shameful this is not the focus. I called a friend of mine who's from Yemen earlier. He still has family there and realizes what a serious situation is occurring. But for the love of God, no one needs another war, peace, Jude. And she went on to say, I view this statement not only as being shameful, but it also violates on every level known to us as Americans who are individually responsible for our specific place on this planet. Yet goes on further in that it negates established ethical and legal systems nationally and internationally. Distressing, Bob. So here we find ourselves standing on this thin and narrow precipice, and how do we respond? Individually, each must answer this question and become the action. In the video footage from Al Jazeera, there is footage of a child laying dead. A child that I am sure in Joe Lieberman's world is acceptably dead, but not acceptably dead in mine. Or, I suspect, yours. But holy Joe Lieberman? Well, holy Joe Lieberman is always looking for tomorrow's war. And, you know, you may have heard in that clip he referred to, I was in Yemen in August, and I was in the capital, Sana'a,
when someone said to me, you know, he didn't say, it wasn't his own words, he was quoting someone else. When someone said to me, Iraq was yesterday's war, Afghanistan is today's war, and if we don't act preemptively, Yemen will be tomorrow's war. Well, acting preemptively means that tomorrow's war becomes today's hot war, doesn't it? But who do you suppose would have said such a callous, cynical, hateful, bloody, filthy, rotten, warmongerous thing to Holy Joe Lieberman? Well, that gritty, that tour of the Middle East was described as a gritty, six-country, seven-day tour of post-war zones and forward operating bases. The tour is being led, on your nickel, by the way, by Senator John McCain and includes his friends, fellow Senators Lindsey Graham. You remember Lindsey Graham. We're gonna be crippled here in South Carolina. We got 31% black people. That Lindsey Graham. Susan Collins of Maine and, yeah, Joe Lieberman. The post from, the Hartford Courant, Capital Watch, notes, it features stops in such vacation hotspots as Libya, Kuwait, Iraq, Yemen, Afghanistan, and Iceland. One sign the trip is tough, says the article. No spouses signed up to come along. And Cindy McCain in a Muslim country? Please. No booze allowed there. So you know now who said that. That's not Lindsey Graham talking. That's not Joe Lieberman talking. Oh no, baby. No. That's Bomber John McCain talking. Sick. Sick. Bastard. No kidding. So we will take a little break and come back. Other stuff to get to in the evening. Your phone calls are also, as usual, welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. It is support without which this does not happen. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
My appetite, light it. sleep while the soldiers get sunstroke, make little fools of ourselves. Oh, we make little fools of ourselves. I need some things to look forward to. Maybe these colors will fade. I never meant to get bored with you, but I never meant to stay.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
16 minutes past the hour. And plenty left to do and plenty left to talk about in the what remains of the program. About, 40 minutes or so of great conversation remaining to us yet. We'll jump straight to the phones and see what's going on. Hey,
Reverend,
welcome to
Robin.
What?
It's
hello?
Your sister.
Oh, wrong number. Let's see here. Oh, I know where I wanted to go. Let's see. Yeah. The story that was there a minute ago that we were talking about, the guy with the pyrotechnics that David from Maine mentioned? Yeah. He was on board a Piedmont Airlines flight 4126 from Baltimore to Washington and was apprehended for a firecracker-like device wedged between two seats.
right? But this is the fun part of the article. Federal officials said they did not believe terrorism was involved, but that Ouellette already had two outstanding warrants in Florida for unlawful flight. Notice, they said they did not believe that terrorism was involved. Right? Right. Didn't believe terrorism was involved. Because, you know, white guy. Now, Brad Friedman reports yesterday a story out of Saturday's Houston Chronicle. Police are searching for a man they suspect is responsible for fatally shooting a convenience store owner during a robbery in Liberty County Friday night. Officers were called about 10:10 p.m. to the Ridgewood grocery store in the 4300 block of North Main near Texas 146 after a customer found the store's owner in a pool of blood behind the counter. From surveillance video, investigators learned that the store's owner, 50-year-old Naushad Virani, was fatally shot in the head during a robbery. The suspect was identified by police as Stevie R. Walder, Jr., 31, also known as Bubba. The authorities say Bubba has a lengthy criminal history in Liberty County, Texas, and is believed to be a member of a white supremacist group, 6'2", about 250 pounds, with a shaved head, of course. They also say he has many tattoos, including a skull on the left side of his neck, a Nazi SS symbol, the Schutzstaffel, on the right side of his neck, and a teardrop under his right eye. He, by the way, drives a green Chevy truck with Texas plate AB17183 and a 1998 dark green Dodge pickup truck with an extended cab with a Republican Party sticker on the back window. No one is calling that an act of terrorism either, even though, you know, it is. So, tough call. What constitutes terrorism? Kind of hard to say, isn't it? More than. So, there we find ourselves. Some things are terrorism, other things aren't. Sometimes this country is involved in blowing up people in far-off foreign lands, and they find that they don't like it and try to retaliate in some way, and they're terrorists. A guy with a shaven head and Nazi memorabilia tattooed on his neck who blows away a guy at a convenience store named Vorani, he is not a terrorist. I can't, you tell me, I can't sort it out. For the life of me, I can't. Need to take a quick break, and we'll come back. Yeah, another little piece of music for you from something, from a Christmas gift that I recently received. A little group called Daddy. Think you'll enjoy it. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice.
Drive out here and visit. Not too worried, it's not too bad.
hardship really is it when you wait for a car to drive by just so you can wave hello, hello. Staring at a starry night sky, dreaming of some place to go.
Well, if we had to interrupt the program for a moment, what a great way to interrupt. The song is Nobody from Nowhere. The band is Daddy. And I received the same as a lovely little Christmas gift. And you know what? It feels kind of thematic. That's me. I'm Nobody from Nowhere. Not a part of the for-profit media. Not a part of the not corporate controlled. Just wherever nowhere is, I'm here, you're there, and we have the opportunity for a conversation. Emily checking in saying, we gotta stop this Hi Mr. Kincaid stuff. It's Bob, just Bob. No misters, please. We're not that formal. But anyway, Emily says, as a criminal justice major, I've studied the issue of the definition of terrorism a bit in my classes. According to my professor, who has degrees in criminal justice, criminology, sociology, and is a former cop who worked in juvie issues, there's no universal definition of terrorism, so that's an issue. However, the FBI definition of terrorism is the universally accepted definition. They have it on their website if you wish to check it out. I'm not sure if universally means all over the earth or just the U.S. or what. Looking at other countries' legal systems, it seems to me all anyways to be universal. And that's the thing. We take something like a definition of terrorism, and that's the point I was trying to make. We use it to suit our own ends. Jackassed society member in Liberty County, Texas, blows away a guy named Varani, nah, that's just a crime. If, however, a dark-skinned man from Nigeria that's terrorism. And, of course, the usual suspects are out and about. William the Bloody Crystal from the Weekly Standard is all burned up about this Nigerian individual. You can imagine why. And by the way, in the story about the guy, Umar Farouk Abdul Muttalab, well, I did that without stammering. On its website, CNN notes, in his first public comment since the Christmas Day incident, President Obama said he directed his national security team to keep up the pressure on those who would attack our country. We will continue to use every element of our national power to disrupt, to dismantle, and defeat the violent extremists who threaten us, whether they are from Afghanistan or Pakistan, Yemen or Somalia, or anywhere where they are plotting attacks against the U.S. homeland. I understand that, and I understand the bellicosity of it. But is there ever going to come a time in this country when we are willing to try to examine why people do this? Will there ever come a time in this country when we will examine what it is about our policies and our meddling around the world that drives people to such acts of hopeless, literally hopeless desperation? There's a passing reference in the movie Avatar. See? Between the grizzled Marine colonel and the protagonist of the film, who is a war-wounded Marine who has lost the use of his legs. This is, son, I looked at your history. You were in Venezuela. That was a nasty bush fight. I was there. I was in Nigeria, too. Bear in mind, this film is set in the year 2154. And so that would be about 144 years from now. Nigeria, Venezuela. Where are we not going to be? Are you a little bit distressed to find out that, yeah, we're hotting it up real good in Yemen right now? What national security interest do we have in Yemen, except for the fact that our Saudi masters have told us to do it? Killing the terrorists? Have they still not figured out that every time we kill one, you know, say 9-year-old little girl laying dead in the sand, every time we kill one of her, we create a dozen so-called terrorists? That's not difficult to comprehend, at least not for me. But apparently it's terribly difficult to comprehend for people once they get significant amounts of power. Reverbo writes in and says, I believe the definition of terrorism is violence designed to keep non-combatant populations in a state of constant fear. If we subtract George Orwell from our lives, I'd say that qualified as terrorism. Yeah. Yeah. Violence used
to advance a social or political goal not otherwise obtainable via peaceful means. I think I've heard that definition somewhere before. Oh, and by the way, during a time when millions around the globe were celebrating the birth of the Prince of Peace, the Israeli government celebrated by killing six Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. And we didn't say squat about it. An advisor to Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and spokesman for the Palestinian Authority Nabil Abu Rudina condemned the two incidents, quote, the Israeli escalation in the West Bank and Gaza and the return to the policy of assassinations and random killings in virtual excuses shows that the Israeli government decided to destroy the independence and security of the Palestinian people and is pulling our people into a bloody circle of violence, Rudina told CNN. The Israeli government should bear the responsibility for the killings and also bear the responsibility for the dead end in moving the peace process forward because of Israel's refusal to stop the policy of settlement and to commit to the references of the peace process. Yeah, I just, can't find anywhere that the United States condemned killing six Palestinians. Israeli forces entered Nablus overnight to locate the suspects and killed them Saturday morning. The strike was a joint operation by the Israeli military and Israeli security services. Oh, by the way, a little story that just sort of popped up out there last week that I never quite got around to that really gave me a case of the blind shudders. Really sickening. It turns out that although the Israeli government had an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy about it, when a Swedish publication carried it and denied, the Guardian of the UK has republished a story about the fact that between, I think, the late 90s and the mid-aughts, stopping like 2004, 2005, the Israeli government, without consent, harvested organs, or the Israelis, a hospital, whatever, harvested organs from dead Palestinians without really telling, you know, for donation. Without really telling anybody. But, of course, we have to be terribly, terribly confused and rub our hands together and why do they hate us? And, well, you know, we prop up a government that goes in and summarily executes people in an occupied territory. Yeah, we do that. That harvests organs. Yeah, we do that. But it's not all Israel, of course. As the folks at Progressive Democrats of America note, the International Coalition to End the Illegal Siege of Gaza is marking the anniversary of Israel's 220-day siege, but you might not know it if you rely wholly on the U.S. media for your news. Leading up to the Gaza Freedom March on December 31st, peace and social justice activists from around the world have gathered in Cairo to march to the Israeli border in nonviolent protest against the ongoing occupation and oppression of Gazan people. The Gaza ghetto. Come on, it is what it is. The Associated Press, the PDA notes, wrote about December 26th the fact that activists have appealed to the Egyptian government to reverse a ruling denying the march participants access to the Gaza border. New York Times and Washington Post barely covered it at all. Egyptian police have walled off a peaceful protest in Cairo at UN offices, keeping it from being seen by Egyptian passersby. The Egyptian government has blocked an aid convoy for Gaza from entering Egypt. And members of the Gaza Freedom March, including American Holocaust survivor Hedy Epstein, have begun a hunger strike to protest the actions. The stories have been carried in media in France, the United Kingdom, Canada, even Brunei. But the major print news sources in the U.S. are treating the story as if it didn't exist. And of course, for the most part, perhaps the story doesn't exist. Because it only exists if people in Gaza or in the West Bank are fully human and worthy of our attention. Now, meanwhile, as I noted, William the Bloody Crystal has his shorts in a wad over the fact that we're not torturing the guy from Nigeria yet. I wish I was kidding. I'm not.
Obviously, we were just plain lucky that this guy's device, explosive device, didn't work. But, Bill Crystal, what does the Christmas Day terror attack tell you about the continued efforts of our enemies to try to strike the U.S. homeland?
Well, they are our enemies, and we have to understand that it's a war. And what most worries me about the reaction to the attack is we're still treating it as a law enforcement matter. The FBI is investigating. He's been arrested. He's been read his rights. In the Washington Post, late yesterday afternoon, after the news was already coming out about the Yemen connections and stuff, a law enforcement authority was quoted as saying, authorities are operating on the theory that he acted alone. We so desperately want not to believe that we have to deal with this as a global threat from al-Qaeda and that we need to act against the key nexuses of al-Qaeda, such as in Yemen, that we hope these guys are just acting alone. But he wasn't acting alone.
You know, it's interesting, Juan, because it does come out today. We find out that he had a visa because he was a student in London. I guess the visa had left. He applied for a new visa in May because he said he was going to take a course. Somebody there checked out and said, you know what, the course that you're talking about doesn't exist. It's a bogus course. They didn't give him a new visa. And somehow one wonders if that should have been in his file.
Well, I think it wasn't as well. It's how we know it. But I think that the big issue...
Well, I think we know it from the British authorities,
right,
now.
But I think that one of the big issue here is that he went on this list in November, the same time that his father went to the U.S. Embassy in Nigeria. So the question is then, at some point, should he have been advanced to at least the no-screening list, which is about 14,000 people? And you know what? We all know. It looks like they're going to ramp up
a lot of this now.
Let's
jump forward just a little bit, if we could, please. Because there's one more phrase here from William the Bloody Crystal that just, you got to hear it to believe it. It's kind of like the Mary Magdalene thing. These people are evil incarnate. And they're all upset. Why? Well, let's check in and see if we can find out. Back to Juan Williams.
With al-Qaeda. He may have visited Yemen at one point. That's about it. And he may have been given the PETN. And the small
he spent enough time to possibly kill 300. This is the problem. This is precisely the problem. This guy has been lawyered up. We don't know anything. One reason we don't know anything, he's not being treated like an enemy combatant. He's not being interrogated. We're not finding out everything we could know about al-Awlaki. This is an ongoing attack, enemy attempt to attack.
You got that? This guy's all lawyered up. Because, you know, Bill Crystal, who always has this strained little smile on his face like somebody's doing something awful to him under the desk. He wants him tortured. I don't know why. I don't know what he expects to gain from it. Because it's universally agreed that torture doesn't yield useful information. What? Sparkly unicorns gave me the... That's what you want me to say? Sparkly Yemeni Al-Qaeda unicorns gave me the explosive? Okay, I'll say it. Just stop with the thumb screws. Quit drowning me. Stop shocking my testicles. I'll say it. The fact of the matter is, when you're dealing with the likes of William Crystal, you are dealing with a psychopathic individual who is sick past sick. Let's go to the phones. Marty's with us, I do believe. Hey, Marty, welcome to the program.
But, Bob, you don't understand. These people, they're animals. They're not capable of handling the democracy we're trying to give them.
Yeah, right. That, you know, they don't love life the way we do.
Yeah, well, that's sarcastic enough.
Yeah.
That's my, yeah, if you're, I don't know if you're, we noticed the chat room very, very early in the show, and I was asking if they had to be, if I could nominate my cousin for moron of the, for moron of the year. Because that's a comment from him.
You're kidding.
Way back. Huh?
No, is that really said that?
He really said that.
I don't want to come to any family gatherings of yours, Marty. I don't want to be around that guy. No offense. I'm sure I'd enjoy your company, but...
And he's here spending a couple of weeks. He won't leave until next Tuesday. And so I'm trying to avoid him for the next week.
Oh, Lord, you've got some...
Because I know we're going to get into it. And so the funny thing about it is, Saturday night, I mean, I was sick Christmas, flat on my back, down, got some eating top ramen, and that was my Christmas dinner.
Are you better now?
Yeah, a bit. So anyway, hung out with a friend of mine yesterday and saw Avatar in 3D and got the mighty 3D glasses and induced migraine.
Okay, well, let me just ask real quick. It was awesome. It was amazing spectacle. But were there after effects for you?
I think for some people the persistence of vision when you're trying to watch it through those polarized glasses. I mean, the persistence of vision can really, I think it really feel like an ice pick going through the skull. That's how it felt to me, and I had to take them off like four times in the first half hour.
Because after the movie was over and we left, I got to say, I felt kind of creepy.
Then I got used to it. But the funny thing is, I believe you mentioned it last week, that the right-wing punditry was seeing all sorts of anti-American messages in the story.
Yes, yes.
And I saw it with a friend of mine. Well, my friend is Japanese. And he's Japanese, and it's of his family. His parents were alive during the internment of the Japanese after Pearl Harbor. And so we were talking about it after, and he said, it just sounds like the whole genocide of the whole genocide of the American Indian, moving them off the land and everything. And I had commented, what they were saying about the Na'vi people, you know, it's just like you pick the enemy du jour of America, and that's exactly what we're saying about them.
Did you catch that line from the colonel that just find out what the blue monkeys want and get back with me?
Yes, I caught that, and I caught it's just a tree, find another tree. That is pretty much the attitude of, wasn't that pretty much the attitude during the Western expansion in the early part of the country's history?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, send them to Oklahoma till we figure out there's oil underneath them. Then we'll send them somewhere else.
Thank you. Exactly. So.
Yeah, and I mean, James Cameron went to great lengths to draw on every oppressed people on the planet and sort of build them into the Na'vi, because there were obvious, overt American Indian qualities to them.
Much better stage, much more spectacular Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, that's why I called it Dances with Aliens.
Yeah.
But then they speak with that delightful lilting Jamaican accent,
mm-hmm.
or Caribbean accent, I guess. And then they have some overtly African features. So everybody got drawn into the Navi, except the white folks.
Well, the white. Well.
And did you notice, for the most part, how lily white that complex was?
Pretty much. So there was the one guy who stayed behind.
Yeah, Max.
Max. He was slightly darker shade than the others, and then there was Michelle Rodriguez, the that fun little helicopter pilot.
Yeah, she was Asian, but she turned out to be a good person.
She's Hispanic.
Oh, I thought she was Asian. Okay, well, never mind.
We're delving in the minutiae. One of the things I wanted to ask, I wanted to get your opinion on, because we were discussing in the chat room, was our so-called Christmas Day bomber that Bill Kristol wants to torture so badly. Just reading about the whole thing, I keep thinking, when I first heard it and the guy saying, the guy's claiming to have ties to Al-Qaeda, and I'm going, and the first thing that popped in my head was Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah.
You brainwash, I do believe the program from CIA was MK Ultra.
Yep.
Patterning behavior and programming people into being whatever it was that they wanted, which is what people, the conspiracy theorists say Sirhan Sirhan was. It's just what it seemed like, and then you're hearing people saying his father said he'd been radicalized by Al-Qaeda, and I'm going, oh really? How do you know it was really Al-Qaeda? Which Al-Qaeda are we talking about?
Yeah, this is, Al-Qaeda has become wholly and entirely Orwellian. Now, this is not to say for an instant that I want to sit down and play canasta with them, because there's real social and cultural differences, and they'd probably transpose their hatred of America onto me, and, well, you know how that goes.
And Sophie has just pointed out that there's oil in Nigeria.
Why, yes, of course there's oil in Venezuela, too. And then, of course, the overarching theme of Avatar, let's go steal the Black Rock and kill the natives.
Mm-hmm.
Did you those big-ass earth-moving equipment?
Yep.
Did you notice they were caterpillar yellow?
Yeah, they were. I nearly cracked up when I saw that. That was hilarious.
I looked at one of the folks watching the movie at the end. They were like, wow, that was great. And I just looked at them and said, yeah, I'm guessing Don Blankenship won't be coming to see this.
all they had to do, they blew up. I wonder if we're giving any spoilers to people in the chat room. You may go see it. When they blew up the tree, it's like, yeah, you could liken that to mountaintop removal, couldn't you?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, that...
And bringing the whole thing down and driving the people away and really messing up the land. Yeah.
Yeah, and making people sick. And right. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody. I'm really not. But I walked out of there wishing we were Navi. But you will get a kick out of this. You read Mark Morford, don't you?
Yes.
Did you notice the James Cameron quote at the head of his December 25th column? When we would, Neytiri, of course, being the female protagonist of the film, when we would draw Neytiri and she had fins on her back and gills and all kinds of weird protuberances and so on in odd places, the question was, well, would you want to do her? No? Okay, let's back off from that. Because, there has to be some sort of sexual connection, I guess, in any film made in the 20th, well, in any film made. How's that? And, kind of hard to do that with, the Aliens franchise, they eventually had Sigourney Weaver being surrogate mama to the creepy little nasty vile, acid dripping thingamajig. Remember?
That was only through cloning, though.
Oh, well, yeah. And
I mean, if we want to be technical.
News Ninja Gene chiming in and saying, now I feel bad because I didn't really like Avatar. The plot line was too simplistic. Well, it was that. I mean, this was not cinema verite or film noir or anything like that.
Well, as you pointed out on your Facebook page, Jim Cameron is not noted for the most complex storyline. Probably the most layered one he came up with was Terminator 2. The Abyss.
And did you notice the carryover of a lot of Abyss special effects?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's lighting. It's the way he plays with lighting, I think, that sets him apart.
It was done quite well. But that was a fun movie, and I was just having fun telling my friend what my cousin would think of it, not realizing they'd seen it the day before, and that my cousin said about it exactly what I said he'd say.
He did.
It's the one thing about these conservatives, they say one thing about it, they all march and goose-step behind each other.
Well, and they are predictable in the extreme. Did you notice the use of the word tree huggers in the film? And of course, that's one of the derogatories that the coal mob uses against us here in the hills. I mean, I think Cameron was obviously paying attention to what's going on the world over, because it's clearly metaphoric.
I wonder if his travels, when he made the. Was the documentary he made after Titanic with him and Bill Paxton diving several times on the ship, which amazingly enough happened just before 9/11, and 9/11 happened while they were filming. It turns out, if you watch the thing, I can't remember. It was then in IMAX. Can't remember the title. Maybe somebody in the.
No, I can't. I can't draw it up either.
Maybe somebody remembers. Yeah, that'll go look it up, and I'll post it in the chat room.
Yeah, well, I'll get an email about it about an hour after the show. That's since we're so close up against it.
Might even be for me.
Well, you've got your work cut out for you for the next couple of weeks, Marty. I wish you well. I don't know if pharmaceuticals will help or I don't know. Stare at your shoelaces, count to 10. You know, this too shall pass. Whatever it takes. Hey, Marty, good hearing from you, brother.
Good hearing from you, too, bud.
Take care. Bye now. That's Marty calling from California, and I believe we've got Kevin here. Still there, Kevin?
Yes, I am.
Hey, there you are. Welcome aboard.
Hey, happy holidays. Didn't see Avatar yet. Don't want to talk about it.
Won't ruin it for you.
Yeah, I'm probably going to catch the DVD.
Yeah, don't see it if you're not going to see it in 3D.
Yeah, I'm going to see it in 3D. Probably. Yeah, a lot to say. I've come to the conclusion, I think the military industrial complex is going to give itself one last year's worth of bonuses.
Hence, Yemen and...
Yeah. It really is what it is. It's like, it's just...
Hey, there's good money to be had in spilt blood.
Yeah, it is. It so is. And, you know, it's like, what's going to happen when other countries... Because what's happening now is that China is using their frontline products, selling cheap clothes at Walmart, Gap, so on and so forth. And they're having their own. These are to invest into weapons industries of their own. And a lot of third world countries are like, well, an American-made weapon costs $800, a Chinese costs $200.
That's true.
Okay. AK-47 costs how much? $500-$600?
You can probably get them for less than that if you're buying in bulk.
Yeah. And
the beauty of them is they work.
Exactly. Unlike the M16 or whatever we use now, AR-15.
Yeah. Highly sophisticated, really, really good weapons that are notoriously unreliable.
Exactly. you know, because I fired off an AK-47.
Oh, I've shot them too, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like a smooth, it's reliable, sand can go in it, water can go in it.
Put it in the mud, take it out, shoot it, yeah.
Exactly, and, you know, even the knockoffs are good.
Oh, Gospodin Kalashnikov knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the theme behind it was, because this is when they wanted to export the revolution worldwide, was do it that any country can make, set up a factory and replicate them on their own.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, it's the open source of firearms, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but what's going to happen with other countries? Because, okay, there, I can name like four countries off the top of my head, China being one, or Russia has always been the one. Or Russia's going to make a big comeback, China, and Brazil.
Oh, sure.
Okay, that's three, and maybe, I don't know, maybe South Africa or... But South Africa is still too much on the United States side. But especially those three countries right there who really, you know, are wealthy enough and power not to, to tell the United States, you know what, go someplace.
It's a valid inquiry.
Because the thing is, this Walmart mentality getting things down to the bottom dollar is going to come back and bite us in the behind. Because a lot of Americans are like, well, that's where we could get things at bargain basement. Yes, true. When you're not thinking down the line.
And that's not something we're terribly, terribly good at.
Yeah. What about 20 years from now when, and the thing is, okay, a lot of quote-unquote so-called educated people are like, well, you know, if you're educated, you don't have to work in Walmart. And I'm like, okay, they're putting the optometrists in Walmart. How long is it going to be before you have every Walmart has a... And I think they do have their tax professionals in there, if I'm not mistaken. The last time I was in one, which was like 2-3 years ago. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I think, yep.
Like, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
So how long is it going to be before they start having attorneys, like the law office working in there for $30,000 a year?
Sooner than you dare think.
Yeah, and teach surgery done. You know, professions where you want the people happy and well-paid, let's say.
Look, I ultimately, Walmart seeks to be...
The Vork?
Yeah. If you can't get it at Walmart, you don't need it.
Exactly.
And if they could get away with selling AK-47s, they'd do that, too. Hey, Kevin, we got to roll on, fresh out of time.
All right, brother.
Good to hear from you, man.
Okay.
All right.
Good one. Sounds quite easy. Have a good New Year.
All right. You too.
Yes,
bye now. And so we are fresh out of time. Overtime, as a matter of fact. Don't leave Brad Friedman flapping in the wind. He's got 3 hours of great radio coming up. By all means, head on over. I'm going to give him a listen. Thanks everybody for joining in this evening. It was a fun little Moran Monday. I don't know at this point whether we reached a consensus on who the Moran of the night was, but by God, we had a field to choose from, didn't we? Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Gracious sakes, have I been waiting for this day. Monday, you know, my favorite day of the week. Of course, we weren't here on Friday, Friday being Christmas Day and everything. I hope everyone had a wonderful, wonderful holiday, however you may have celebrated it. We had a sort of a low-key Christmas here, but it was also very relaxing and very enjoyable. The ground is covered in snow right now here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia. And we're still working on the leftovers from Christmas dinner. But you know what? Good leftovers. Now, so I do. I hope you all had a wonderful, wonderful holiday. But I'm just tickled pink to be back. I mean, back behind the microphone. 3 days feels like 3 months. I mean, I can take a Saturday and a Sunday and come back Monday, but you add in that Friday and I'm just completely discombobulated. Feel like George Bush after a ride on the Tilt-A-Whirl. Where am I? But it is Monday, and we're back for a foreshortened week. Granted, we will not be here New Year's Day, but, you know, otherwise, and I don't know. I probably won't take New Year's Eve off. But I'll be gone New Year's Day because I've got a massive, massive amount of college football watching to do that I intend to do. So I know it. It marks me as some sort of shallow person that I watch college football. But it's my little bit of escapism. So we've got 4 days to get this done. And talk and cuss and discuss and carry on and so forth. And, you know, it's become a feature of Mondays that, Mondays are something and Wednesdays are something and Fridays are something. And what the Mondays are is Moran Monday. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Come right, cut right down here. Get your program. Can't tell the right wing Morans without a program. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Here on the sideshow, you will see right-wing Morans like you have never seen before. All for no cost to you whatsoever. They do this for free. Well, not really. They do it on your backs, but you get the idea. It is Moran Monday on the horn. And we have several nominees. One of whom, well, if you noticed the update that I placed on my status update on my Facebook page, and if you do Facebook, friend me up, and, you know, that'll be great, and I don't turn friends away and that kind of stuff. So it's a great way to see where where my weird little twisted little brain is taking us on any given evening. We have several nominees. We have, for instance, and some that I didn't even list. One of the unlisted Moran nominees is, of course, whom else but, Morans is Morans. Who? That's right. Michelle Bachmann, welfare queen. Yes, right-wing, fiscal conservative Michelle Bachmann, the woman who believes that if it occurs on planet Earth, it must be good for you. Remember? CO2 is naturally occurring, therefore it must be good for us. Oy. Yeah, that Michelle Bachmann. It turns out that while she is a first-class teabagger and probably a birther and a deather and a tenther and a, you know, that lot, that bagger. And that all means that she's anti-government. We don't need no big government. You know the speech.
And she hates handouts, and she hates socialism, and she hates welfare queens, you know, all that Reaganistic, the jingoistic crap. Yeah, she don't like her no welfare queens, except in herself, because it turns out she is one. Yeah, no kidding. And the more in queen of the Congress. Well, granted, there's a bit of a competition going on there because what's her name, Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, runs a pretty much dead heat with her. But I don't know. Michelle Bachmann may have opened up a lead with this one, because it turns out that while she hates welfare queens, and hates socialism and government handouts, she's all the time that she's been going on about that. She's been collecting handouts. Yeah, no kidding. The Environmental Working Group is a nonprofit watchdog that, among other things, tracks recipients of agricultural subsidies in the United States. And lo and behold, guess who signed up for the agricultural welfare program? That's right, Michelle Bachmann did. She and her family farm, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, nudge as good as a wink to a blonde man, cyanimal. The family farm, the Bachmann family farm, got $251,973, to be precise, in federal farm welfare subsidies between 1995 and 2006. Her father-in-law.